Blog Talk Radio.
Cannot talk about it. We want to discuss with all tonight about the smartest and the dumbest people in the room. A lot of people out there, you have to understand that Black people are the poorest people in the world. And that at the heart of that is that we have not cultivated a mindset that says we need to elevate ourselves. But that begins with having knowledge. That begins with having intelligence. And when you are the people who are fighting against knowledge and intelligence, then you're already putting yourself at a tremendous disadvantage in a world that requires you to have the ability to learn. It requires you to have that. And if you've made your mind that the ability to learn is overrated, we're already starting off at a deficit with a problem. That's already a difficulty, because how are you going to lead if you can't think your way out of situations? How are you going to do that? It's not going to happen. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines for you now. The telephone number is 646-787-1933. That's 646-787-1933, our personal access code to the Black radio program in existence. And when we use the term Black here, that's another thing right there. When you have intelligence, terms like Blackness don't scare you. Terms like Blackness don't scare a person who has intelligence. Cain Velasquez, the heavyweight champion of the UFC, he's got it tattooed in great big huge letters across his collarbone, brown pride. We as Black people try to run from things. You see, how I was raised, Black was synonymous with intelligence. It was synonymous with great. That's why I use it so much. It's synonymous with that. Most of you have not been taught that. This is the place that is going to give you a free opportunity to start developing that thought in your head for yourself. We'll go ahead and open up the phone lines here. Caller from 951, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First, this is Mona Shea.
Hello, Mona. Welcome back,
Mona,
to the Black Channel.
Hello, Melissa. I'm just listening in right now. I'm not in a good area.
Okay, we'll go ahead and put back on hold here. Thank you very much for checking in with us. And, of course, we do make the feature available, which is a very nice thing to have for those who may not be in a good area for internet service. See if we can grab caller from, well, let me see, hit the wrong one because they wanted to jump around at the last moment. Caller from 239, you're on live with the Black Channel.
I'm just listening.
Okay, call from 239 is just listening. Now, for everybody who's listening, if you're on the line now, just press the number 1 on your keypad again, and theoretically, it should remove you from the call queue and just put you over into listening again. Technically speaking, it should do that. Or at least that's what the brain surgeons over there at Blog Talk Radio said. So far, not working. Wonder if I can get a discount. Caller from 901, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, this is my first time calling Black First.
Black First sister, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yashelle, calling from Memphis.
Okay, did you say this, Yashelle?
Yashelle.
That's cute. And what's on your mind, sir?
I don't know what the subject is, but what I'm building, I'm trying to make calls for the 12-inch doll, Ken doll, the black one. Do I need to patent my patterns?
Okay, I'm not quite understanding what you're asking. Your phone's coming through really muffled, so I don't know if you have it on speaker or if it's up under your chin or something, but your phone's coming through real muddled. I'm not quite making out what you're saying.
Is this better?
Okay, and what was your question again?
I'm creating my own patterns, drawing out my own patterns for the 12-inch Ken doll. I want to market them. Do I have to get my patterns patented or something?
I don't see how you can patent clothing unless there's something unique about the function of them. Patents usually protect functions. So if this is some new or unique function that does not already exist, then yeah, you might want to do that if it's something that just really is special. If it's something that, you know, makes it unique and special in regard to everything else. If it's not, if all you're doing is making miniature clothes, Ken's already got pants, got trousers, and a dress shirt. So, I mean, unless you're doing something really, really unique in trousers and dress shirts, in which case, why are you just confining it to Ken dolls? You ought to be selling it to the rest of us. But if you're not doing that, I have a hard time understanding how you patent it.
Okay, actually, it's more geared to the Ken doll because, one, the clothes that are on that are available for sale, they look a little alternative lifestyle-ish. So my clothes are more of the manlier, masculinier type.
Right, but the fact that you have Ken in mind for it, though, is not what makes special. There's lots of other dolls out there and male dolls and whatnot. So like I say, unless what you have... Style is not what makes something patentable. A piece of clothing is not patentable because of styling. It is patentable because of function. For example, let's just say if you did, the difference between buttons and dress-up, buttons, zipper, or Velcro. See what I mean?
Okay. I utilize all of those.
Right, but I mean, those things are already been done, so it's not like you can patent them. So unless you got some unique function that if these clothes somehow work in a unique way, that's different.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if the clothes can't get dirty or if they put themselves on or, you know, if they clean themselves, now that's patentable. Or, you know, if they fit in a specific type of way that is not already out there. You know, there's some clothing designs that fit in a certain way that makes them patentable. But if all you're doing is making a shirt style that's already in existence, you know, if they couldn't patent it, you can't.
Okay. I guess I really was wanting to know, is there a way I can make it where my style cannot be stolen from, like, someone else, the style of the clothing?
Yes. A design of clothing is something that you can. Now, you have to look into something a little bit different. That might be something you need to trademark or whatever the case might be. That is something that can be done. That does not mean you will be able to do it, but that is something that can be done. What you would want to do in that case is you would want to consult a trademark and patent attorney. And they will be able, you'll need to pay them, but they will be able to investigate to see if your design is patentable or trademarkable in such a way that it can be protected, that other people cannot replicate it. But now, in this case here, yes, you would need an attorney to investigate that for you. That's not going to be something that you will be able to determine on your own.
Okay. Well, I just recently thought about this because that is on the hobby side of what I do. I own a vegan bakery, and it's on paper. I've been operating, and when I do get a call, I have two restaurant customers. But I would like to open a restaurant, actual place, but I don't know where to start.
Well, just understand that food service is probably the most difficult type of business you can open. Just be aware of that. Food service is the single most difficult one because there's restaurants everywhere. People have already got an inundation of choices. Trying to open a restaurant without marketing is usually going to be a guarantee for failure, though. They tend to be very expensive. And by that, I mean, you know, if you don't have a couple of $100,000, it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to even have a shot at succeeding. I'm not telling you not to do it. You might be in an area that really, really has a need for a vegan restaurant, But just understand, food service is, I mean, there's a reason why even McDonald's has to close locations from time to time. That's a tough racket. Food service and clothing are the two most difficult things to get to. And you have chosen food service and clothing. So, like I say, I'm not trying to discourage you. What I'm saying is just understand what you're asking for, okay? Understand what you're asking for. It's the same as if me, like a guy, if I said I really love cars, I want to start a car company. That's going to be a tremendously difficult operation, even if I didn't need a car plant. Just making go-karts is a very expensive operation to do. Forget regulations. So it's just a difficult market to break into because people already have so many options already, and you're a new player. I mean, people have been wearing clothes since Africans taught how to do it. So clothing is not new. People have been eating since we stopped walking on, since we stopped being amoeba. So that's not new. Those are the two things we've been doing the most, eating and wearing clothing. And even though those are two of the basic necessities, unfortunately, that also means there's plenty of people already providing it. So if what you're doing is not something unique that has a target market that in your area that already wants it, chances of succeeding become very unlikely. Just being totally honest with you. Now, if you have such a thing, go for it. But you might want to run it by a couple of people just so they can make sure that you don't put up here. Because even if you had $500,000, I'd hate for you to have $500,000, plow it off into a restaurant clothing, and then wake up 5 years with $0. So you want to do as much footwork now as you can to find out, hey, this is something that I love doing. Is the economic environment actually going to allow me to do this? I'll just have the last word.
Okay. I got those snacks. So be Memphis. Thank you. Black first.
Black first, sister. That's going to be an uphill climb, let me tell you. I don't mind people daring greatly, just understand that's going to be an uphill climb. Caller from 585, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Just listening.
Okay, caller from 585 is just listening. I am going to raise every type of L there is, first thing about that number one. We'll do it again. It didn't do me any good last time, but if at first you don't succeed, keep hollering till the cops show up. Caller from 503, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, Jason. Black first.
Black first, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Sequoina from Portland, Oregon.
Hello, Sequoina from Portland, Oregon. What's on your mind, sister?
Yes. Well, first I want to say thank you for getting back to the Black Channel. I've been joined every single broadcast that you have uploaded onto YouTube. I listen religiously, and you hit every nail on the head, and I really appreciate it. And one that I appreciate most specifically, most recently, was the one that you had, the discussion that you had with the brother who was an accountant. It was very informative, and it was very well said, and I just appreciate it. I mean, I know that for myself, I want to go into business at some point, and I want to be able to build an economy in which build community, and it allows Black people to come and pull our resources together, because that right now is what we need desperately, is pulling our resources together and bringing each other together. So so I really appreciate that information that you and the brother talked about. What I wanted, I don't know if you guys are on the subject about business, and I caught the tail end of Melissa's speaking about teaching their children, teaching the children and all. But I kind of want to ask you, make a statement and maybe even ask you what you think about this. I'm having a really hard time with Black folks talking about coalition building. I'm really having a hard time, and I would really like to hear your stance on this. Where I live, Black folks out here are very scared. You made a broadcast, or not a broadcast, but you had talked about Dr. Umar Johnson coming out here to Portland, and I played a part in making sure that he had a safe place to go out here, me and a couple of other my comrades. And Black folks are really scared out here. They have a really hard time processing the idea of empowerment. Hold on one second. They have a hard time processing the idea of empowerment, not idea, but really believing that they can have empowerment without having to build coalitions with other people who are, hold on. I'm sorry, I'm at the radio station I volunteer at, and so people are coming in, opening the door, so I apologize. But nothing gets my blood boiling more than hearing Black folks say that they, you know, that it's strategy. It's just strategy for Black people to work with other non-Black people to build and understand how we can build our own economy. You know, taking from other people and seeing how it can apply to us. And I'm having a hard time, you know. I'm very resentful of it. And, you know, I just like to have, you know, you've talked about it, but I'd like to get your idea on how to combat that. You know, how can I, what would be the best way to just kind of say, you know what, hey, we don't need that as strategy. It's not really strategy. I'm reading Powernomics by Dr. Claude Anderson, and I love the part where he talks about how Black people are only used in coalition building because of our unique history. We bring a certain level of energy when it comes to non-African people and other people with however they feel themselves aggrieved. We bring energy to that. That's the only thing. It's strategy for them, but it's not strategy for us. And I agree with Dr. Claude Anderson when he says that it doesn't benefit us. Building coalitions do not benefit us. So would you agree with that? I mean, what do you think about that? And what's the way, and if you don't agree with it, how would be the best way to combat it, in your opinion?
Well, ever since I started broadcasting, I've made it very clear that, as I was mentioning yesterday, speaking about the Asian situation, that Dr. John Henry Clark said it better than I ever could, that you cannot have a black-brown coalition or a black-anything-else coalition because we are at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder. We have no power and influence, nothing to offer other people. And the only way that you can maintain a coalition is if the members of the coalition have the ability to punish other members of the coalition who break the coalition. Now, you've got a Filipino population up there in Portland and whatnot. Ms. Dunko to tell you that. And with a situation like that, please tell me, what power do black people have in Portland to punish any other people if they do wrong by them? What ability do you have to punish them? Now, if you don't have the ability to punish them, then you cannot have a coalition. You can be a groupie, but you can't be a coalition. I can go to a concert and cheer or boo, but that's not going to take any money out of Keith Sweat's pocket. That's not going to take any money or prestige from Lane. That's not going to do anything to them. I can cheer, I can boo, but the only thing I can really do is leave my money. After I've given my money, that's all I can do is cheer or boo, both of which be inconsequential once I've given money. As black people, when we empower other people, as I said last night, there is no seat at the Asian empowerment table that says reserved for black people. There is none. At the table of Asian empowerment, all those chairs say reserved for Asians. At the table of Latino empowerment, all the chairs say reserved for Latinos. At black people, if it's not in our interest, what are we doing supporting it? But that's the problem, is that black people are scared. Black people are scared, mm-hmm. black people are afraid, and worst of all, black people do not have a purpose. You can read that word purpose as agenda. And Tariq has got a pretty masterful series he's done talking about agendas either, that we shouldn't get together if we don't have one. Can't get anything done if you don't have an agenda. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we didn't squabble and bicker so much, how do you accomplish anything when you've got 50 people in a room and none of them, and you have 50 different ideas about why you're there? Naturally, everybody's going to start pulling on each other to say, oh, go this way. No, go this way. No, go that. We should have all been on the same page before we got there. Question, how many Buddhists walked into Baptist church this Sunday?
I would have to say zero.
That's what I mean. Everybody who walked into that church had what? An agenda. That thus they were all able to get together and work together to accomplish it. All the people who showed up at the synagogue understood why they were there. All the people who showed up at the mosque understood why they were there. Black people are the only people who are together in a large group. And it is not certain and settled why we are there before we went there. Thus, coalition building is impossible because the Asians came to the table with an agenda and the Latinos came to the table with an agenda. And the Arabs came to the table with an agenda. Black people are the only ones who showed up with no agenda. None. And that's why you have the situation that you have. So in your case, even though it is a cell, you have an agenda. And that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. That's why what you do succeeds more often than the general population. Even something as simple as being a Umar Johnson there. You're actually getting things done. The general population is not joining you in this endeavor because they don't have an agenda. Their agenda is work. That's not a plan. That's a daily activity. That's not an agenda. An agenda is where you accomplish something that you don't already have. You already got your job. What are you going to do to get the next step? That is your agenda.
Absolutely. And I had a, like I said, I am a volunteer at a community radio station here, and I send you email updates, so I don't know if you ever have a chance to read them, but I always, you know, send you updates about things going on around here in the community, and if you haven't, you know, had a chance to check them out, I hope that you do, but I started my own broadcast here at the community radio station that I volunteer at, and my pilot project aired last Thursday, and it invited I invited some community leaders, well, not community leaders, let me not say that, but more like people who are involved in, say, for instance, the Nation of Islam, the Moors, and I invited them in for a conversation, and it was just basically just to do an introduction. It really wasn't trying to, like, you know, attack each other or get into debates or anything, not yet anyway. But, you know, but I invited them because I want to get to a place, I want to use this platform to get to a place where eventually we start to, I invite those same people back and create a think tank. And, you know, and it could be so easy here. One of the things that I loved about having Dr. Umar Johnson here, and mind you, I didn't bring him here. He was invited here from someone else through Portland Public Schools. And when they found out who he was, and Dr. Umar Johnson even said it himself, he doesn't think Portland Public Schools found out who he was necessarily. He thinks it was somebody black. And, you know, and after talking about it with a few people, they understood, and I got it too. But But one of the things that I noticed when we had to think of something really quick, because we only had like 48 hours to think of, you know, how where and when we were gonna, not when, but where we were gonna get the brother. But after that, I was on such a natural high. It just felt good. And the room was packed, by the way. I mean, it was packed. No, standing room only. People loved it. And, you know, it was just great. And I left, and after a couple of days after that, it dawned on me that this could be so easy if we could just come together. It was just easy. All it took was just a couple of us to get the word out there, to get the message out there, and boom, we united just like that. You know what I'm saying? It could be that easy. We didn't need to have somebody who was non-black to help us put that together. It just took a couple of us to put that together, and I just thought, why can't we do that? And so I thought with this broadcast that I'm going to have here at this radio station that I can recreate that somehow. It's not going to be big names, but it will be a way for us to recreate that and do that again, because it was really easy, you know? And so,
everything is hard when you're not trying. If you're not lifting a finger, everything is difficult. Everything is monumental. Everything is epic if you never get out of bed and do something. We as black people are not failing so much because there's a tremendous amount of opposition to us. We're failing because we're the only people who are not even getting up to try. And when someone says, get up and do something, we want to have all these long, drawn-out, lengthy, elaborate debates about things. We argue over stuff that simply does not matter. I've had people call this broadcast and try to argue with me about whether or not black people need to do anything about our impoverished situation. I mean it the way I said it. I've had people who've called me, and you all have heard them, try to argue with me that money doesn't matter. They want to focus on spirituality. What that person is saying is that they have completely checked out and opted out of any possibility of us ever having prosperity, that they are calling this lifetime as a win for white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking myself off the field. Let them run wild. Now, importantly, you've got a situation there where, I mean, they want to penalize business owners who don't cater to homosexuals. And what they did with Umar Johnson in particular, and this was a particularly disgusting, distasteful,
absolutely,
and reprehensible,
absolutely,
thing. They, one of the newspapers there went to public schools asking the teenagers what they thought about homosexuality. And I'm like, really, what kind of reporter goes around talking to children about their sexuality? What kind of person does things like that?
Oh,
that
they
was
do that.
Indictment, and they actually thought that they actually wanted to act like they were the forward-thinking people, that they were the correct people, and that it's just perfectly normal to go walking up to a 14-year-old and asking them about their heterosexuality or homosexuality, that was perfectly normal. And you've got a problem with Umar Johnson? Yeah, that's because you're the deviant.
Absolutely. I mean, they do that here. I mean, one school in particular where I'll be mentoring some BSU students, Black Student Union students, they have a group for queer community in the high school. And I'm like, really? And they have it right next to the BSU students at this high school. And I'm just like, they really are trying. And then you have the nerve, you have the audacity to say that Dr. Umar Johnson is wrong in saying that it is a mental illness. When you're pushing that on young, impressionable kids, you are not saying, you're not saying that this is a natural way. You're basically pushing that. You're pushing that agenda on young, impressionable kids, you know. And I have, you know, comrades that I'm supposed to be building with, who fight me tooth and nail that homosexuality is a normal, natural selection in the African way of living. And they're mad at me because I cut it up. I shut it off. I said, no, it's absolutely not. I don't have a problem building with LGBTQ people. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is when it becomes a vocal part of our conversation. That's what I have a problem with. I have a problem when you're trying to tell me that this is a normal way for black people, for African people to live. I have a problem with that. That's where it, that, and that's why I become resentful about the homosexual communities, because you're trying to tell me that this is something that is natural to us, and it's not. And then I have to look at those comrades, those African comrades of mine, and question. I've got to question you now, because how can you build an African society when you're not even mingling or you're not even creating life with an African male or an African woman, two African
How can you help build an African society when your priority is something that has absolutely nothing to do with black empowerment? Either we're going to progress and promote a black agenda or a gay agenda, but there is no black gay agenda. That's not the coalition. There is no black gay agenda. There is none. This president who's in the White House right now has done more for homosexuals than he has for black people. But then again, he's also done more for midgets and the Game of Thrones than he has for black people, because he's done nothing for black people. At least you showed up for the NBA championships. You showed up for that. He's done nothing for us. There can be no black and gay agenda because we don't have any power to punish the gay population. How can you enter into an agenda, into a coalition with somebody who you do not have the power to punish, as I said, but if they break that coalition, we don't have the ability to do that. That's why you got the Asians down there in California and in Texas who are now on the side of eliminating affirmative action, because they see now that the agenda and the numbers favor them. 20 years ago, they were in favor of it. Now they're against it because they're at the top of the class, and affirmative action would remove spots in the universities and colleges for them. So what are they doing now? They're voting what's in their best interest. What in the best interest of gay people is not necessarily in the best interest of black people. And we need to keep what is in our best interest at the forefront of every discussion. And when people want to get sidetracked into, well, what about my non-black girlfriend? Well, what about my gay friend? What about these people over here? What about my dog? What about my cat? You know, what about scandal? At that point, we are no longer discussing. This is about that agenda again. You've totally abandoned the black agenda so that we go and discuss something totally unrelated, but you're telling yourself that it is related. And that's the problem. You're telling yourself
it
that
is
it
problem.
Is.
Yes, sir. It definitely is a problem. It definitely is a problem for me, because I'm at a point in my life, Jason, where I'm just like, I'm done. Like, I'm not trying to have these kind of conversations, you know. And I think I feel like where I am and where I live, it's really hard to try to convey that and try to rally support and not even rally support. But the very people who talk about black empowerment do complete opposite. I mean, they say it, but then their actions speak completely different, and especially when we get in a crowd of people where they feel like, you know, a crowd of people who have so-called influence, you know what I'm saying, and their whole attitude just changes. And for me, I can't do that. I don't do fencing. I'm not black over here when it's convenient, and then I'm multi-dimensional everywhere else on the other fence. I don't do that. And you got a lot, too many black people, especially out here in the Pacific Northwest, who just do way too much fence sitting. And particularly to Portland, you know, black folks have been beaten up around here. I mean, they have been beat down. You know, I'm not originally from here, but I've been living here for a couple of years now, and I've been engrossed in finding out the history of black people here. And it's very rich. I mean, you know, I'll be happy to share with y'all one day, you know, some of the stuff that goes on here. But, you know, it's no different from what's happening in Chicago, D.C., Detroit, Chicago. It's no different. It's just on a smaller scale. But you know, but black folks here are broken, and they're and it's sad because the history here is so rich. The gentrification here is just, it's just torn people up, and you know, but I don't want to give up because for the rest of my life, this is the work that I want to be centered around. So I don't want to give up. I don't want to give up on Portland because I know that there's some real good black folks here that really, really could use someone as strong as I am, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but it's true.
Let me ask you about that. Now, you said, okay. I don't want to give up on Portland. The question is not, does Sequoia want to give up on Portland? The question is, has Portland given up on Sequoia?
It might get there to that point. I mean,
recognize it? Wait a minute, what if it's already there? Would you recognize it if it had already happened? Would you even know what it looks like?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, here's my thing about it, okay? We as black people, we have a habit of overstaying our welcome. 5 years ago, I told black folks there were 10 states that no black person should be in, and at top of that list was California. I said it 5 years ago, California is done, it's finished. If you're a black person, get out of there. There's nothing you can do with California. It's over. Now we've just sat here until we went from number 2 to number 3, now number 4. Next stop, number 10. I mean, that's exactly what we see happening here. And having this constant running gun battle and debate about it, we need to understand when something's lost. I mean, what percentage of your electorate in Portland is black? Can anybody tell me?
Yeah, I mean, we're less than 30% for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what percentage of your lawmakers are black? Who do you have to go to? Is the mayor of Portland black? Do you have a majority black city council? Do you have any black city councilmen? You know, we just saw what happened with the schools. Nothing even slightly resembling a black agenda going on there. So you see what I'm saying, that I can leave you in Portland, but the question is, what can you actually accomplish in Portland? There is a difference between giving up on Portland and giving up on black people. That's not the same thing. Those are two mutually exclusive subjects. You can give up on Portland forever. You can give up on America and not give up on black people.
Right.
And the idea that there can be such a thing as a black Portlander, that is, again, something else that I would challenge. Can you be a black Portlander? Can we? Because it's nice to think that you have universality. We as black people have been chasing universality, which was the original name for integration. We've been chasing that since Marcus Garvey. Back then they called it the universality. Now they call it integration. We keep chasing that carrot at the end of the stick, and no matter how many times they take the carrot off the stick and bust us over the head with the stick, we sit up here and keep chasing it. And what I'm saying is, at what point do you grow a brain and say, you know what? Maybe that's what I should be doing. If you're going to remain in Portland, there's only one way and one reason that you remain there. One and one only. Are you gaining power, wealth, and influence? If you are not doing that, everything else you're doing is going to fail. Everything else you are doing is going to fail. Black is not just a wonderful word. It's not just a vocation. It's a religion. And I am defending my religious preference. And nobody has the right to gainsay my religious preference. So if you want to say, do I have a religion, I'll sign off on black first. I'll sign off on that one. Let's just say that's my religion. Now that that is the case, what I do is I operate the best interests of that. But if you're not doing that, nothing else you do is going to work. Now, what you all did with Umar Johnson, you know, things didn't work with the school board, but then you put them together on your own, and that's what's supposed to happen. How do we do that? Because you have an agenda. You had an agenda. Everybody for once was on the same page and said, look, we're not going to bring this man up for nothing.
Absolutely.
This man is here. Let's make this work out because this is a once-go-round opportunity. Let's make this work. Everybody put their egos on the shelf and worked for
Absolutely.
What was in the best interest of presenting this man.
Yes.
That's
yes.
what happens
Absolutely.
When you have an agenda. But you know what? You already knew what the agenda was before you started saying, what do we do about the school board? You already knew that the priority was getting him and giving him a forum to speak. So what I'm
right.
saying is that you make sure you have an agenda and everything else falls in place. We usually fail because as black people do not have an agenda, and you don't have an agenda if you have not already fact-checked everybody in the room to make sure they're on board. If they
okay.
showed up at a meeting for Umar John's appearance and you ask why they're there and they're saying, I'm here for free tips, you aren't on the same agenda as the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes it simple. If you want to, though, I don't know. Have you already sent me an email regarding your broadcast?
Yes, my next one's next Thursday.
Okay. Just send me, when you get ready to broadcast again, just send me another email about it, and I'll be sure to check it out because I'm pretty busy and stuff like that because I'm usually doing my own broadcasting. But I'm going to check it out and see what you have going because we need as many intelligent black voices out there as we can. It is not about
yes,
our religion.
Sir.
I don't care if Muslim, Buddhist, or if you worship the double cheeseburger. I don't care what your religion is. I'm not concerned about your political affiliation, Democrat, Republican, vampire,
right.
whatever it is, you can be whatever you want to be. What your religion is, that's between you and God. Your political affiliation, that's between you and Obama or Romney, whoever you go with. But when it comes to black people, now that's between you and me. And if we're not on the same page, you got a problem. If you're trying to gauge what's best for black people against what's best for your religion or your political affiliation, that you're in the wrong place for that. You're in the wrong place. Other things have their place. Not here. Not here. And do not subvert this under those other things. You don't do that. That's where we keep falling into trouble at. That. If everybody's on the same page, it works out just fine. And if they're not on the same page where you are, you know what? When white folk cannot get a job where they are, they leave the state and they go where the money is. They always have. They came across the ocean. Why? Because that's where the money was. Because black people want to act as if where we were born is a divine right and a religion instead of going where the power is. And then can't figure out why we can't get anything done. Because this car has no engine, but you keep furiously turning the key in the ignition and wondering why the car is not moving. Go where the power is. Go where the engine is. That's what we should be doing. I'll let you have the last word.
Definitely. At some point, I'm definitely going to go where the power is. Wherever Dr. Umar Johnson is, that's where I'm going to head to. So, but thank you, Jason Black. I also want to talk to you about, not right now, hopefully we can correspond via email, but I would love to talk to you about getting your 7 a.m. here in Portland. So I would love to correspond with you on that, and I'll just send you an email, and we can talk that way if you're okay with that.
That'd be fine, because I want as many people to have this in as many places as possible. That does not mean bootlegging. I want as many people to have this in as many places as possible. I want it to be exhibited in as many places as possible. Umar Johnson does a fantastic job in it. One of the things that's been taking so long is that, for example, with the parts that I want to use with him and some other people, this documentary is not going to be something that you're going to be looking up on a website and somebody's going to be picking it apart. When I do a video, when I do a documentary, I check myself, and I recheck myself. I fact-check everything. That's why nobody has ever been able to put out a video and say, this is where I was wrong. They can't do it. So people have tried, and they've made complete fools of themselves. You can't do it because it's not there. So in the case of him and whatnot, he laid down a lot of points. And I tell you that this man's intelligence about these things is labyrinthal. That's exactly what I mean. So definitely, I would love to be able to converse with you about that and so they can have that for you, because any place needs it, it's Portland.
Absolutely, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I would love to be the catalyst for that. And again, I'll just email you and we'll just correspond that way. Black First, Jason, love you. Love your broadcast. And let's continue to do the work. Let's continue to build.
Black First, sister, thank you very much for joining us here. Got a board full of calls over here, which is perfectly fine. You need to let everybody that you know out there know that you found the home and the haven of intelligent black thought, because we discuss the things that nobody else is discussing, because nobody else can. They're too busy to talk about basketball games and strippers and rappers and what in the world was going on BET or VH1. This place for adults. If you're still, you know, bedazzled and still sitting up here worrying about, you know, puberty, this isn't the place for you. It's really, really not. Just letting you know. See if we can grab another caller here. Caller from 315. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Yes, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Outstanding. I'm Brother June Albert from Fort Drum, New York.
And what's on your mind, brother?
Well, you know, I think personally, number one, I listened to everything that you talked about tonight, and I think that you're 100% correct. You're on a direct profile as far as identifying a black man. But I have to contradict just a few things, and I'll explain to you why. I think there's a difference between a black man and a Negro, slash what America calls now niggas. And I don't like to use that word, but I think it's a strong definition.
Well, I mean, nobody's going to argue with you over that, so there's no disagreement there. What's the next thing?
Oh, well, then that's cool then. Then we're on the same page then. I've been in pretty much, my feet have been planted on seven continents, all seven continents my feet have been planted on. And it was unique, me coming from overseas, and I was treated better overseas and never called a Negro or a nigga or nothing like that until I came back to America. Then I was nigga again. And then here's the thing that was so crazy. White folks called me nigga, but that was one thing. But the other different level was I was called nigga more by black people. So it made me kind of like contradict certain things in my life where I was like, what really is going on? What am I really dealing with? What am I really supporting? What am I really protecting?
Well, that depends on the people that you are hanging out with.
Don't think.
I mean,
trust me,
if you're hanging
out
with a bunch of people who just call you that, I don't know why they were calling you that, but they're just hanging out with a bunch of people, that's in their vocabulary.
This is a language. They think this is a language. I'm about to go into something so deep in detail with you that you'll see it for yourself, the point I'm about to make.
I really associate with people myself who that's part of their normal language. I don't really associate with them.
I disassociated myself with those people.
Yeah, that's what you have to do.
We
have a segment of our population that does that. And like I said, if that's just a normal part of their discourse, I will inform them that it's time to elevate their thinking. But beyond that, if I have a disclaimer too many times, and in my book, three is too many times, then at that point, I just disassociate myself. So for me, it's not really a matter. I don't care why they're using it. I don't care where they got it from. I don't care what they mean by it. For me, it's verboten. It's forbidden. It's like have a job. You would not let one of your employees call a customer nigger. So, and you would not debate with them why it's not acceptable. So
and
for me,
that's exactly where I'm about to go
debate.
In my statement right now. That's exactly where I'm going in my statement right now.
Because we don't accept it. So for me, there is no debate about it.
That's exactly where I'm going in my statement right now. It was so unique because when I came back home from overseas from deployments, because I served a country and I did three tours, it was very unique when I came back home that everybody was doing pretty much the exact same thing. Nobody was really progressing. Nobody was really in the situation to where they really want to move forward and do what they had to do. It was like everybody was just existing. everybody was doing Everest commercials and taking four-week courses and stuff like that. And I'm like, really? Are you for real? You're 40 years old now, and you're just now talking about going to college or progressing or doing something like that. I listened to a young lady's conversation where she was actually talking about a situation to where, you know, she was going into details of black people and how they progress and stuff like that. And, you know, what I really think is, I don't really think that black people have a problem. I think that individuals, certain black people, have a problem. We have some great black people out here that are doing a damn thing, that are really out here making things happen. We have great professors, great lawyers, great doctors, great teachers, great book writers that are actually out here making things happen. And I think that if we specifically focus on the negative and just make it to that level to where we say that all black people, we're never going to progress. Actually, I identify racism. I know it's here. I live here now, retired military. I'm 41 years old, retired. Retired Army. I live out here in Fort Drum, New York. I live in a small village called Carthage. I'm the first African-American firefighter, first African-American arson investigator. This never happened, ever. It would never happen again after me, probably. When I walk into my fire department, it's still to this day like, that black dude, there's that black dude. But I earned it. I worked it. I worked, I achieved it. My wife and I, we live out here in the suburbs, and it's not that we're different than anybody. We don't articulate our words any different way. We just say what we say. The same I'm talking to you
brother,
right now.
Yeah, definitely. I can understand because we're kind of running up on time here. I'm going to have to ask you to kind of wrap it up because I wish I could let you go on for an hour, but I really want to try to get to the point because I'm having a hard time being able to follow you here.
The point that I was making was it's not always about a situation. Sometimes it's just in a situation to where black folks can do good things. And I think personally that I agree with your entire message. And I think it's great. I think that everything you put out here is absolutely great. And like you said, you had to wrap it up. I know you gave the young lady almost 30 minutes and she just vented about anti-everything and black folks not doing this and white folks is against us and all that, and you gave her a whole profile.
Okay, you listened, you heard something totally different from me.
Now that I'm speaking, it's now like we got to wrap it up.
Sir?
I was trying to explain to you. All of a sudden, trying to explain what.
Hey, sir, I'm not going to say sir again because I said sir several times. I will not say it again. All right? This is
my
broadcast. Now,
yeah.
I've you speak for a while now. The thing is, you're meandering. I'm not very interested. If you don't, you are. I am the host. I am the final arbiter over who is saying something coherent and who is rambling. I'm telling
all
you.
All I was simply saying, brother, was I think that brothers have
and your mouth opens up, I'm going to let you go talk to yourself. If I'm talking again and you start talking while I'm talking, I'm not going to have my people trying to listen to me over you. I'm not going to talk over you. Hey, if you're just going to insist on acting like an N-word, I can't associate with you. And I was serious when I said that. I was very serious when I said that. Now, this is my podcast. People come here because they like listening to it through the lens through which I present and the sensibilities through which I present it. I didn't have a problem with what she was saying. I thought she was very much the same point. You took us literally around yin yang and China, literally, around all seven continents. You were not concise. You have not been to the point. You haven't been. You might know where you're going. We are not really interested in all the minute details. We're really not. Get it, get in, and get out. That's what they teach you in the military. Tonight, you didn't get it. You got in, and apparently we were never leaving. So my job is to make sure that my audience gets the full benefit of the time we have together. If that is offensive to you, I will simply say that I'm sorry you're offended. but I'm not going to apologize for the way that I host my broadcast, sir. I'm not going to do that, brother.
I mean, I let you let a woman vent for 30 minutes, okay. So I figured I could just go ahead and go into detail on my...
I have asked you already several times now not to talk while I'm talking, and you just did it again. Now, I'm not a jerk, not hard on people, but black people have a problem where they don't know how to communicate like adults. If I were in your house, or if this were the military, and you are a superior officer, even if I thought you were dead damn wrong, you don't talk to a superior officer in formation. You don't talk to him. And when you come here, I'm the commander-in-chief. Now, you would never, I don't care who you voted for, you would never sit with the sitting president of the United States and try to talk over him. That's the quick road to a court-martial. You'd never try that. And yet you've come here to do just that. Are you sure that that people weren't calling you nigger for a reason? Are you sure? Because I want you to go back and listen to yourself tonight and figure out, could they have been onto something there? Were they really saying that without cause?
Brother,
just
what are you talking
your behavior tonight?
What are you talking about, man? I was sitting there very, very appropriate supporting your supporting your show, your radio show. I was supporting you.
Okay. If you're supporting me, then you will not tell me or dictate to me
how
far
I was
going
to make a point. I had to go to a point, and I was saying about black folks. There are good, articulate black folks out here. What are you talking about, man?
And that's wonderful.
There are educated black men out here. There are educated black women out here.
Okay, you were taking too long. Is there something for that sentence you don't understand? You were taking too long.
I don't understand where you were going with that. No, I don't understand where you were going with that. There's no argument here.
Okay, and that's
I was talking about the articulate brothers. When young men and young women are out here doing the dang old thing, what are you talking about?
We didn't need all the details. You could have just said what you just said right now. And there are articulate black folk here. You see how quickly that went? Didn't take 5 minutes. You were meandering. That's all. And it's my job to keep this moving as briskly as possible. If there's no new information being given.
I'm a female, and I can go ahead and just talk for 30 minutes and just talk about a whole business plan and all that. That's fine. We can just go ahead and go all the way. 30 minutes.
Not if you're female.
It's fine.
No, if you're a guy.
When a male comes in and says something and talks about the revolution of black brothers doing a dang old thing and successful, 41 years old, retired, now you really don't need that conversation.
Brother,
is that what you're saying?
You're the only person who keeps repeating his age like that matters to anybody. Who cares about how old you are? Who cares? I don't. The only person who thinks that's important is you. I don't care how old you are. You're 41 and you act like you're 13. So much for being 41.
Where the hell did you get that, man?
You
can't even grasp
that.
That wasn't even
a hang yourself up? Would you like to hang yourself up now, or would you like me to do it?
I'd like for you to do it.
I am not going to thank you for joining the Black Channel. 41 years old, behaving like he's 13. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my broadcast. I'm the person who decides if you are moving quickly enough or if you are not. I'm the person who decides if what you're saying is prescient enough or if it's not. And when I walk into your house, if I'm trying to sell you something, you decide, for me as the salesman, if it's taking too long. People decide this every day with this broadcast. They decide it in whether or not they continue listening or whether they turn it off. So far, I've done pretty good about getting people to stay listening. I've done pretty good. And you can take a look at my view counts in my video, and you can see, hey, I do all right. I do all right. So I trust my judgment about it. I am not here to make friends, people. This is not the place where you come to get all the emotional baggage and weight off your chest that you've been walking around with for 20 years. It's not. I'm sorry. Get a therapist. This is not the place to do that. Tony Soprano had to get one. Why come you? How are you special? We already know there's intelligent black people. We already know there are dummies. We already know that there's Negroes, niggas, nigrets. We already know that. It's not necessary. It's really not. And did you notice that he mentioning he's 41-year-old retired military? I've been all around the world, 41 years old retired military. He sounds like the typical black female talking about, I'm a strong, independent black woman. I've got a degree in sociology. I'm a strong, independent black woman. I've got a degree in social work, in psychology, in underwater basket weaving, in bubblegum chewing. He might as well have said, I'm a strong, independent black man. That does, bottom line, that does not impress me. Brother, I'm not impressed by none of that. I'm not impressed by any of that. That young lady called in with her agenda. You called in with a damn resume, man. Come on. You are too old to be trying to impress people with your resume. You are too old to think that anybody is just floored by that. You're supposed to be military. Grow the hell up. Grow up, man. And no, I'm not going to talk to you like a five-year-old. I'm going to talk to you like an adult. If you were 5 years old, I'd say, little Jimmy, stop talking. And guess what? You would have stopped. I understand my audience. That's why when I make my videos and my broadcasts, they listen and gravitate to it. I understand my audience. If you do not like the way in which I communicate to my audience, perhaps you need to go get one of your own. And then you can communicate to them however you want, as much as you want. And that's real talk, brother. Caller for 646, you're on live with the Black Channel. How old are you, and have you been in the military, and how many continents have you been to? Caller from 646 apparently has been to enough continents, they've been abducted. Caller from 646, last try, you're on live Black Channel. Okay, caller from 646 has been abducted, possibly by the 41-year-old military guy. I was waiting for him to bust on the phone there. You let the women know. I've been seven continents, been across the seven seas. I've traveled the world in the seven seas. Everybody is looking for something. Let's grab another call here. Caller from 718. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Good evening, sir.
What's your name you're calling from, brother?
I'm Chris. I'm calling from Connecticut.
What's on your mind, black man?
I was definitely amused by that last call, I have to say. Well, I should say amused and saddened. I have to say black people, particularly black men in general, use their histories or their, like you said, their personal resume as a crutch to somehow either deflect or, you know, it seemed like he came with this sort of, well, I don't know what he came there with. I won't even ponder to guess. What I did call to talk to you about is something that occurred to me today, is that economics does not guarantee economic viability within the black cult, within the black community. You can have a master's degree, you can have a bachelor's degree, you can have a PhD and still be out there unemployed. You need to have, as you said, a plan as to what you intend to do to ensure your own security and invest in yourself. And I think that we look to others, and we look to, you know, sometimes we look to other messengers or other venues to find some sort of, whether it's religion, whether it's a leader speaking, to find some sort of light at the end of the tunnel, when somehow along the way we don't really listen to our own instincts or, for that matter, our own common sense. And I think that to some degree, sometimes we compound mistakes in our lives by not obeying degrees of common sense, degrees of maturity, and figuring out sometimes that things shouldn't be spelled out for you. Things are very much black and white. Things are things that we are not cut any entitlements in life. In fact, we're supposed to be working harder because the scales are balanced against us. So therefore, we do have to work harder. We're not given to things. I think that some of the younger brothers think that they deserve things because on some level that they should just be handed them. You know, I've worked my life. I paid my way through college, working in freight, working in UPS, and working in other Kmarts and other stores to put my way through school because I realized the value of school, because I realized that someone was going to pay for that for me. And that's when I had an appreciation for it. I realized I had an appreciation for the workforce, and I realized that any time, any moment, I could be fired at any point. And it didn't matter how hard I worked. It didn't matter what I sacrificed or what sort of work history I had. And that I was not in control of that. And I will still not be in control of that as long as I am a pawn in that, as long as I'm an employee. And this is what
and as black men, we keep trying to find a shortcut to empowerment. We keep trying to find a shortcut to respect. You in the military 20 years, that's a great and wonderful thing. What it means is that, you may have a situation here that it might be impressive to them. It might be impressive to them. But what I'm talking about, what you own, what you control, and what you're passing down. And we spend too much time as black men trying to get respect through talk and not nearly enough through what you've done. That brother wanted respect for his talking. That young lady had called here to tell us what she had done. And she sends me emails all the time. She was calling to let us know what she's done. That's the difference. She was not just talking about how super groovy and great she thinks black society is. She was calling and talking about what she's done. She called and asked me a question, and she wanted to know about the agenda. That's what she wanted to know. We as black people, right, however, and particularly as black men, sit up here and try to get shortcuts to respect. We try to get shortcuts to respectability and honor, and it doesn't work that way. I'm tired of all the damn talking. And see, that's what single mothers teach their sons. They teach their sons to talk your way to respect. It doesn't work that way. You don't earn points by sitting up here flapping your gums. You earn points with us by being able to demonstrate what you own, what you control, and what you're passed down. And that's the problem. Too many black men have taken on that hustler mentality, and everything is about running gang. Everything. Everything is about how can I talk my way into this or talk my way into that. And I guess, I guess he was not prepared for the fact that somebody like me, I am not easily impressed by words. I'm not easily impressed by words. You want to impress me? Show me what you've done. Dr. Umar Johnson, Camp Portland, Nicole Duncan and the Oregonian threw salt in the game. The school board went AWOL. This young lady and her friend got together and said, you know what? We're going to put something together now. He may not be able to speak at the school board like he wanted to, but we're going to put together something so he still gets to speak to his people. That was what they did. How am I not supposed to respect that? She didn't sit here and say that I've been working on behalf of black people for 20 years. She didn't say that. She told me what she's done. As black men, though, brother, we're kind of slow on the uptake to understand the value of that.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Why do you think that black men think that that mentality works?
Because it does. It always has.
Does it?
It's not like we had a bunch of money. Black men have always had to jive talk their way into things. The term jive talk specifically refers to black men. That's why they call it jive. It specifically refers to us and the way that we treat things and the way that we do things. In other words, you're not really saying anything. You're trying to accomplish a goal without actually saying anything. You're talking, but you're not saying anything. That's what's referred to as jive talk. You're trying to get something simply by speaking until you finally get it, not by actually giving me something and your words actually giving something. That's not what you're doing. So we use it because it's always worked. Why do these black men sit up here and send pictures of naked pictures of themselves to these females? Because he's not smart enough to do anything else, and it works. It doesn't work often, but it works.
Okay. So it does work to some extent, but then eventually it fails, and then they have to go to some other means or some other tactics to eventually get what they want. And in the meantime, while their lives are failing, And while they're not investing and while they're not building anything, life passes them by. They get older. They have kids from different mothers, like roosters. And then they wind up basically proclaiming themselves as victims of a society that they were complicit in making themselves such as by their own actions, by their own deeds, by their own ignorance, by their own lack of taking certain initiative in their life. Basically, instead of looking to leadership and others, look to the idea of common sense, look to the idea of, instead of talking, listen, absorb and digest what's being said instead of being so quick to cut people off. That's why I like this show. I listen a lot to what's being said and I digest it. And I come to certain conclusions after a period of time, sometimes even replaying, sometimes when I go to bed. I listen to it by my pillow. I play it sometimes, because sometimes you need a voice of reason in the dark before you go to sleep. And I get a sense of the differences in your broadcast as opposed to, say, another man's show that I met you on, where they would text and laugh at callers while they were actually talking about subjects and not taking it seriously. And so I'm looking at the severity of the black plight, and I do want to put something out there. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to basically say that I will be putting something out there. I actually am into podcasting, and I do want to put something out there for the black audience, something in the arenas of basically getting them to wake up to a certain level of consciousness and social awareness, because I think it's very lacking. And I do think that we're in danger right now in this society. We're in the gravest of dangers of really running off of a cliff. The black society right now that I see, that I've seen for the past 10, 15, 20 years now, I just see it just in a state of shambles. I don't see the educated black men and black women that the previous caller saw. I see some exceptional black women and black men. The rest I see as lost. They don't know.
Well, the problem is that most black people are on a bunch of nonsense, and even the ones who are not, most of even intelligent black society doing what he was doing. Everybody wants to get together and get their ego stroked, as opposed to sitting down and saying, you know, start off the broadcast by saying that you need a big ego and a small ego in the small place, in this place. And yet we as black people and black men in particular have failed to cultivate that particular characteristic. We want to have an ego and that's it. And we need to, as men in particular, lose our appetite and lose our desire to have our time spent and occupied by people who are inflating their egos, because most black people get educated and get intelligent so that they can start inflating their ego. And what I'm saying is that it's time for us to throw that mess out the door. As far as you starting your own broadcast, if you want to, like I say, hey, that'd be a great idea. We definitely need as many voices out here as possible. There's plenty of room out here and plenty enough space that it needs to be done. Maybe you'll have a way, an aspect or a niche to speak to that I don't speak to, or that I don't speak to as well. And, you know, there's plenty of room for more people. Other folks try to hold other people down and get jealous and stuff. I don't do that. If I see somebody's out there saying something that's, you know, on point, hey, I've got no problem giving them recognition for that. So definitely if you decide to do that, hey, that's a great idea. If you need any help or information or pointers on it, just let me know. I'll be glad to help. I'll be glad to help give you information on setting that up. I'll let you have the last word.
I'll ask you because I'm Facebook friends with you. I will say this, sir, that, and it's something that you said to religion, and I'll say that I'll end on this. I've seen where black society. I was an altar boy in my church long ago. I came from a religious family, Protestants. When I left the church and left religion behind, I made a conscious decision to do that because of what I saw that black people did, is they covered in the realm of ego stroking and importance. There was a man who was there. It was a deacon who was molesting the children, molesting all the other acolytes and altar boys and altar girls. And I remember that I was even, it to some extent, I was approached by him. And I remember running to my parents and telling them what had happened, and they blamed me at first for what had happened. But then afterwards, and they believed in my story, and they went to confront the actual reverend. And what I remember then is that their response was is that he's too important. If this comes out, this scandal, it will destroy the church and it will destroy our credibility, so we have to keep it quiet. And I remember that's when I left the church, and I never went back. And it was for that, among black people, we're supposed to be a safe haven, church, your children, people that you worship with, the society that basically is supposed to engender trust. They're only interested in fancy cars, talking about the game after the sermon, talking about, getting together on a couple dates. They really didn't take to heart any of the things that were said or any of the things that needed to be reflected upon. So when you talked about ego stroking just now, that's what came to mind in the history in my head. When I looked in an obituary to see that, my molester at that time has now been dead for about 20 years. I didn't realize until looking at that just now, and it struck a chord with me. This is a man that had probably had many years with children and around children that he should not have been, because black society did not, or the black community that was at large, did not protect their children. They thought that ego and importance and stature were more important than protecting.
Yeah. And understand now, that's a conscious decision. That's not an unconscious decision. They made a conscious decision that, you know what, I'm willing to let you molest these children. They've made a conscious decision, just like deacons and the reverend's wife make a conscious decision that they're going to let him sleep with all these other women. They make a conscious decision. Understand, they walk into these things, know full well what they're doing. Thank you very much for calling in with us. Please check with us again. See if we can take a caller 402. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello?
Yeah, they're on live with the Black Channel.
All right. Black First, Jason, how you doing?
I'm a Black First brother. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Louisiana.
All right. And what's on your mind?
I was listening to the discussion you were having there about religion.
Okay.
And it dawned on me that it's very interesting the way people's minds and behavior change completely when somebody puts on a suit and a tie and they stand behind a podium. And for whatever reason, they believe that anything that comes from the mouth of that person behind that podium is worth more than gold, worth more than diamonds, because they end up giving up something that's worth a lot more than gold and diamonds. They give up their very soul. They give up their very being to this individual, not even bothering for once to question whether or not this person is legitimate. I've never been one to believe that if somebody was wearing a suit and tie and was standing behind a podium, that they were the real thing. I mean,
well, first you'd have to define what is the real thing, because we all have our own reasons and our own rationales for giving in to something. The real truth is that people want to give in to things. They just want a good enough reason to do it. Now, you notice what I said. I said they want to give in to things. Didn't say they want to get things. I mean, they think they're going to get something out of it, of course. But they want to give in. They want to submit. And as black people, more than anything else, we want to submit. We want to. We just want somebody to give us a good enough reason to do it. That's all. And that's why black people can switch from one religion to another without missing a beat. The pathology does not change. And the results that they expect do not change. Nothing changes except who they're calling God and what name they're giving them. But everything else remains the same. And even when black people become atheists, only thing that happens is they replace Jesus or Allah with something else. Hatred of Jesus or Allah. But the situation and the circumstances socially do not change. I have friends on my friends list who are Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, transcendental meditationists, atheists, everything under the sun. And don't you know that the pathology of everything I see them post is the same? If they believe in Jesus, every other post is about how the Lord's helped them. If they're Muslim, every post is about Allah. If Buddhist, every post is about, you know, being super spiritually creepy. If they're atheist, every post is about how stupid it is to believe in religion. At what point do we say, you know what, I've gotten everything I need to get from that area over there. It's time to move on. It's time to do something with what I've got. And the point is that we as black people, we don't actually have the intention of ever doing anything. The process of going to church, that is the goal. The process, that's the goal. The process of going to the mosque, that is the process. That's it. Once we've done that, that was what we were trying to do. So what you're describing is, I've never wanted to submit to a man in a suit. I want to know his credentials are. I want to know all this. Yeah, but that's because your goal is something outside of him. For most black people, that is the goal. Why? What are most black people building? What are they building? What are they doing? They're not doing anything. They're not going anywhere. What's the agenda? They don't have one. They don't have an agenda. So that's the difference in the pathology between you and them. Why it seems like, you know, it's like, well, why aren't they seeing that? Because in reality, they are not there for the same reason that you're there. They're not there for that. They came specifically so they can get super groovy with the man in the suit up there. That's the whole point, is to say, I went to this church. I'm a member of XYZ Church. I'm a member of Potter House. I'm a member of World Changers. That's the point. Black people love our degrees. We love our titles. Umar Johnson spoke about that. Black people love having titles. I love being able to say that I was the first black police chief. I'm a member of Masons. I'm a member of the Eastern Stars. Can't tell us what the Masons of the Eastern Stars have accomplished for you, but I'm a member. And thus, I'm a member of this church. I'm a member of that church. I've got this degree. I got that degree. They never want the conversation to progress beyond that to what have you done with all these credentials and whatnot. They never want it to get that far. They only want it to stagnate at, take a look at my title. Take a look at my title. Take a look at my suit. Take a look at my robe. Don't ask anything beyond that. That's the difference.
Okay, well, is it possible that the reason that they stopped at that point is because once they got it, they didn't know what to do with it?
Exactly. That because the goal was the process. Unfortunately, you are in a white system that demands that the goal must be a goal. And once you accomplish the goal, you have to do something with it. But for, this is why you have so many black people who don't have a problem staying 8, 9, 10, 12 years in school. For them, the process is the goal, not to actually accomplish anything. We as black people are not building anything. We're not accomplishing anything. And that's why they're perfectly fine with the process. They are fine with the process of salvation. They do not want salvation. And what, the church never offers them salvation. I know, they think it does, but it doesn't. You can go to church your entire life. At what point do you get salvation? At what point, if you're supposed to be saved, then at some point, isn't your behavior supposed to change? At what point do these people get, quote, saved? Because we're looking for their behavior to change, and that never actually really happens. But these people keep going, and they keep going because they are happy with what they are getting. And what they are getting is the process of salvation without ever being required to actually deliver on their end of the bargain. So they feel like they're getting what I always said, job talk. I'm getting something for nothing. I came here, I'm living all wild now, but I can still claim salvation without ever having to actually do it. That's a hell of a deal.
Well, let's see. No, they actually get the salvation. I just don't see the progression afterwards. You know, like I'm thinking, okay, you get the salvation and then what's the next step after? Of course, now the next step after, you got to wait for that. You got to actually die to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, but they never get the salvation, never get the part that they're supposed to do here, and they it's questionable if they get the part after they die, but the part that they're supposed to get here, where you are made into a new person and turn away from your sinning ways and stuff like that, for the most part, did that guy up there in the suit, in the pulpit, did the deacons, did the deaconesses, did they actually have anything to do with that? Anything at all? And I submit to you the answer is no. I'm submitting to you that the answer is no. What they do is they go to a place, promises them a process. Hell, the churches don't even talk to you about sin anymore. The biggest black churches not even discuss sin anymore. Bastard babies, you have never heard Creflo Dollar say anything about fornication. Never. T.D. Jakes, never. Woman, thou art loosed. That's his motto. Sell these books. Nobody, they don't even teach the Bible anymore. So salvation can't be the goal if your biggest churches don't even teach the Bible anymore. And why are they the biggest churches? Because they don't teach it anymore. And if they started teaching it, the congregation would empty out. We didn't know you were going to start talking about salvation. Well, isn't that the reason you're here? Yeah, but we're not supposed to be talking about it, remember? It's going to be like Fight Club. We'll never talk about it. And that's exactly what they do. They just go, hit the process, and we're done. Now I can go back to doing what I wanted to do before I came here with a clear conscience. I want to keep this process of sin, salvation, sin, salvation, sin, salvation. I never want to make it over to salvation, and we're done. So I've got my goal. My goal is to be in between the two. I want to be between sin and salvation. That's right where they stay.
Okay. Now, I do have another question.
Okay.
What if we are exactly where we are supposed to be, doing exactly what it is that we're supposed to do? And the reason that I ask that question is because from the time our people's feet set foot on this dirt in shackles all the way up until now, it seems to me that our primary purpose has been to work to elevate the condition of others through our labor in fields, even if it's a job in an office. If it's hoofing it and dancing on the stage, singing our butts off, if it's an acting performance, whatever it is that we're doing, it seems like it's supposed to be toward elevating the living condition of another group of people. And as long as we're doing that, as long as we're going in that direction, nobody seems to have any complaints about what we're doing or how we're doing it. But the second we decide, or we desire, at least desire, to decide that I want to try to take a portion of this, and I want to try to use it to elevate myself. I mean, you'd have thought we turned around and slapped a baby straight across the face and turned his head round and round like the Exorcist. By considering the possibility of trying to elevate ourselves, isn't that threatening what we're supposed to be doing here?
Well, this goes back to purpose, and I've always talked about purpose. What is our purpose for being here? And that's an individual thing. You have to decide for yourself. Some people believe that their purpose is to be a tool of servitude. Let's just be honest about this. As black people, we need to accept the simple reality. Most black people accepted the condition of slavery, just like they accept it today. There was no component in them that said, I'm sick of this, I'm unsatisfied, I'm unhappy with the condition that I'm in. There was no basic human component that said, I don't like this, I can't do this anymore. They are willing to accept the shackles. So the question becomes, are you willing to accept them? Because the truth is, most black people, if slavery were reinstituted tomorrow, most black people would simply let them walk up, put the shackle around their necks, and march them off to the fields. And once they got out there in the fields, they would never attempt to escape. In other words, we'd be right back in 1814 all over again. Just that quickly, just that easily. That's a simple fact of the matter. Most black people are not ready for freedom. Most black people are not ready for empowerment. That's why my broadcast is not for the masses. It's for an elite few. But the truth is, no. No, most black people are not ready to leave the plantation. They weren't ready before Lincoln. They're not ready after Lincoln. And they're not ready today. They're not ready. They don't want to leave. It's so much easier to turn their life over to somebody else. I have had people literally here on this broadcast and tell me that black people are free because, quote, we can buy Air Jordans and cell phones. I've had them literally tell me that. Then when I tell them, but wait a minute, take a look at the way white folk are living and Asians are living and Latinos are living, and then take a look at us. We work harder than anybody else and got less to show for it. What kind of life is that? Then they tell me that. Then they come with the Jesus stuff. Then they tell me that they come with the religious stuff, the spiritual stuff. Every single canard and excuse that says money doesn't matter. And yet they're paying for that internet service that's listening to this broadcast with nothing but money. We are a people who have looked for every means we can to psychologically avoid growing up. The truth is, as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said, white supremacy infantilizes you. Let me say that one more time for everybody else out there who didn't get that. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said, white supremacy infantilizes you. It turns you into children, is what it does. That's what it demands. It does not demand an equal relationship with you. It doesn't want parity. To be daddy, and you're the child. Take a look at every place around the world that white supremacy has instituted itself. Africa, Mexico, Australia, Japan, the Middle East. You're watching the process as it begins now. The Japanese do not treat white people like people. Take a look at their manga and their anime. They treat white people like gods. They treat white people like gods. The real goal is to get that type of relationship where he's way up here and you're way down there. There is only one question that a person needs to ask themselves. Do I accept that subservient position? If you do, go with them and get the hell away from me. But if you don't, it's time to get cracking. I'll let you have the last word.
Okay. I've also been listening to you talk about the power, the wealth, and the influence. And I would like to say that I bought a house about 10 years ago. Now, before I bought the house, I was paying rent, you know, in order to have a place to live. In buying my first house, not only did I get a portion of liberation. I didn't get it completely, but I got a portion of it. It's kind of like opened a window to give me an opportunity to see what could be in front of me. And over the last 10 years, I have had the opportunity to see that there is more to what I can do than what I have been doing. And I hope there are enough people listening who can understand that idea. And in listening to you,
I feel a little more enlightened.
Well, I thank you very much for checking in with us, brother. Please do give us a call again. And I don't have anything against buying a home, by the way. Somebody thought that I had a problem with that. I don't have anything against buying a home. I mean, that certainly beats rent. If you can buy one, absolutely. A home is an investment. Earning property is always recognized as the first step towards mobility, or one of the major steps towards it, as long as you have a plan. Your plan should not be to buy the house. The house should be part of an overall, overarching economic strategy and economic agenda of lifting yourself up. It should be part of an overreaching agenda. We're going to go ahead and take some more phone calls here. And for those of you who are listening, you need to let your family, friends, let everybody that you know that you have found the home, the haven, the stronghold, and the super fortress of intelligent black thought. They don't talk about the kind of things we're talking about anywhere else, not the way that we talk about it, because they can't talk about it that way. This is in-depth, and this is where you are, and we're glad to have you with us. Caller from the 813, you're on Live with the Black Channel.
Black First, Mr. Black, it is Jason calling from Raleigh. How you doing today, brother?
Black First, brother, what's on your mind?
I just wanted to chat with you a bit. I'm the one that posted the article from Forbes earlier on today. Thanks for bringing that to the forefront.
Well, it was a very good article, by the way, and everybody should go to my wall and see it. I posted it up this morning. It's up there from this morning, and it's a very good article because Google is the largest media company on earth. We all know that they're just moving things all over the place. It is tremendous right now, and they're letting you know, as one of the largest employers, one of the largest corporations on earth, that your degree doesn't matter to them, and your GPA does not matter to them. And you know what? That sounds highly reminiscent of someone else I know, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
You know somebody else who doesn't ask to see your degree and doesn't ask to see your GPA and doesn't ask to see your report card? Your banker.
Yeah.
Remember yesterday I said that I've had bankers ask me about my girlfriends. I have never once had one ask me about my degree, my GPA, or my report card. Has never happened.
The reason I actually I found that article is from yesterday's broadcast and the one the day before, with a lot of people, you know, saying, yeah, for a lot of black folks, we're always told, you know, go to school, get a degree, and get a job. And you had a couple days ago, we had the young girl out here in Fayetteville who basically got her worthless degree in sociology and didn't know what to do with it, but that was like her accomplishment, and she turned around and figured that maybe I'll go to the military. So, you know, so when I heard that, and then yesterday listening, it was one of those things where I said, okay, I just had surgery, so I'm just sitting at home. I'm really not doing anything. I can't move around that much, so I just started looking around, and I looked in Forbes and I saw that one, and I posted something else with a list of billionaires and just asked people just to look and see, notice who was on the billionaires list. And, you know, it was all tied into what you were talking about. You and Melissa were talking about as far as education is concerned as well, because I wanted to know, or people to know, that when, yes, it's okay to mention colleges to their children, but I'm in line with you where you say you as parents need to build something, and so that college is an option for your child, or if they want to be in part of your business that you're building, if they can have that decision on what they want to do instead of, well, and then if they do want to go to school, that we as parents and black people are steering our children into the right types of programs instead of, if your kid comes to you and says, I want to get my degree in psychology or sociology, you should be like, no. That's not going to happen. And it goes back to what Melissa was saying earlier, is that you have to start when your children are young with getting into math and getting into science. And then I totally agree with Melissa when she said that even if you're not strong in the math, get with people that do know math and science very well, okay, to help you raise your kids and get that knowledge. And it goes back, and we don't do that because it goes back to couple other callers, Mr. I Got a Big Ego, I did 20 years in the Army, we have that ego. We have such an ego that we will not ask people to help us, even though we know we need help.
Oh, by the way, Jason, before you go any further now, how many years have you been in the military?
I will be retiring in August, and I will have 22 years of service, and I will tell you right now, 22 years of service will get me a retirement letter, a pension for the rest of my life, but it won't mean squat out there as far as 22 years, kiss my behind. It's not going to get me anything like that. It doesn't matter. I don't even look at it like, hey, I retired from the Navy, you're supposed to respect me. I know coming out, I have to do my part as a man, as a black man, to garner the respect. I do not expect anybody to give me a heap of praise just for serving 22 years in the Navy. Because what I look at it as, yeah, I gave 22 years to the Navy, but now I'm behind. I feel that I'm behind on building something for myself. You understand where I'm going with that?
Now, I want you all to listen to the difference here. Two black men, both the same age, both the same vocation, same amount of time in the military. Take a look at the attitude of the one, and then take a look at the attitude of the other. And I'll just let that speak for itself. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, but like I was saying, though, you know, we need to check that ego at the door. Just like it said in the Forbes article, we have to have that big ego, and we must have some humility about us and have that ability to say, okay, I'm not really – when the kids get into, you know, the 6th or 7th and 8th grade and they start learning algebra and trigonometry, you may not know it, but you should be able to have a network of people that you know that you can say, look, can you help my child with this? Because we really do need to stare our children into – if they want to go to school, they need to go to stuff as far as the engineering and, you know – the complicated stuff, the stuff that's worth something if you're going to go to college and get a degree. There's too many sociologists around here. There's too many psychologists. You know, you go to the traditionally black schools, half of them are already talking about a communications degree, sociology degree, a psychology degree. Everybody wants to do that. And then what are they doing with it? Or business administration. Okay, what is that getting them? What is that doing for our community? Where you're basically sending your child out there to be an employee. And that's what I said. Are you willing to say, are you training your child to be an employee or the employer? Which one is it? And it goes back to what you said before. If you just want to subscribe for us to be subservient, fine. Get away from the broadcast. You know? Or do you want our children to be empowered to make a change within our community? Because the wake-up call came when you see it in California and Texas and everywhere else, you know, what we thought we had as far as coalitions are null and void. And you're right, there is no seat at the table for us. Nobody cares about us. Nobody's going to take care of us. We are the laughing stock of the world right now, okay? We are the laughing stock. If you can't figure it out that, oh my gosh, a majority of white folks laugh at the other broadcasts and all the other shows, and they're garnering a lot of white followers and a lot of white fans, that should stick your antenna up immediately, like, wait a minute. This is not where I want to be. This broadcast that you do is not for those that want to ha ha rah rah, yay, you're so funny, and this, that, and the other. That this is not the broadcast. I'm completely with you on that one. Okay? Because it has to be empowerment. We have to sit here and pick up books to get, you know, read books from Dr. Claude Anderson, Wilmot Amos, and, you know, all these other, Dr. Umar Johnson, and all these other people that have been telling us for years that we had just completely ignored that this was coming, that this was coming. And I mean, if the article that talked about the Asians that are not in favor of affirmative action doesn't slap you across the face and say, hey, this is real, it just got real, I don't know what will. I don't know what will. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is you also talked about people in Jamaica. Now, somebody on there made a comment at me because they were like, how dare you speak on Jamaican issues? Well, excuse me, I'm born in London and my family's Jamaican. I think I can speak on all issues, and I know exactly how the situation is in London, England, and I know how the situation is in Jamaica because I have family in England that tell me black folks are just as destitute, bad as they are here, or sometimes even worse, as by the example of the weed head caller the other day. And I have family in Jamaica, and I know exactly how destitute those folks are. You can't tell me that those people are doing big things when you've consistently had no problem voting for white men to run parliament. That's a black nation, but you have white men sitting as your prime minister. That's ridiculous. But you're going to tell me I can't speak on Jamaican issues or I can't speak on British issues. You serious? I can't speak on black issues? They need to go somewhere with that and stop trying to defend what something that's indefensible, which is the truth. I know I'm round. I sound like I'm ranting.
Well,
sorry.
They didn't like the fact that we were saying that Jamaica's got the problems it does because, you know, one of the contributing factors to it, of course, is that you have a culture that prides itself on weed smoking. Will someone please tell me where the economic dominance has been created by all that weed smoking? You have black population is not being oppressed by white supremacy, and yet they can't get it together. Why is that? And I submit to you that a major component of that is that most of your warrior class is narcotized or lives in a narcotized culture. We have somebody who lives in Jamaica right now, Garveyite. I mean, he'll sit there and co-sign it. So these people are talking about what they wish. That's how bad it is there. If the marijuana wasn't causing the problem, then these people should be, that place should be bursting at the seams with money with as much as they take in. Notice those fellas did not want to discuss where the money goes. They wanted to pretend like everything was okay. They did not want to discuss the poverty at all. When we want to discuss the poverty, they want to talk about America, like black people in America are living worse than in Jamaica. Dude, seriously? Stop that childishness. This is what we do as black men, and you think going to a different country is different. Man, black folk are the same all over the world. That's the point I've always tried to make. Black people are in the same shape with the same mindset all over the world.
You couldn't put it better. You know, it's the same problem. The same problems we have here are the same problems they have there. The men over there are worried about driving brand-new cars, chasing women, you know, and you know, the biggest thing that they bigged up was, you know, the bad boy, gun, rude boy image. That's what they love. That's what they want to big up, you know. That's what they want to big up. And you want to sit here and say, well, you can't talk about my country like that. No, and you're right. It's black men around the world. We have to do better. We have to. And we have to start with ourselves, and we have to start it with our children. We have to steer our children in the right way, the correct path. Even, you know, and that for those that, even though you're single moms out there, if you hear it, it starts with your kids. You've made your mistake, but now you have to go ahead and get these kids on the right path. You have to. You have to make that effort. You have to do the extra work. The school system's not going to do it for you. Just like Melissa said, if you got to go out there, hit up Barnes & Noble or wherever to get extra books and sit them down and turn off the darn TV and sit them down and make them do extra work, that's what you have to do. Stop letting that television raise your children and babysit them while you know, on Facebook or WorldStar or whatever else that you're doing. You know, sit there and allow those kids to learn and teach those children. If you don't know how to do it, get somebody that does. Find out how to grow those, you know, cultivate those children, groom them. You know, it's not a major accomplishment when you see one black student out of a thousand scholarships. One goes to one black kid. Nobody dared ask what the demographics of the other 999 students were that got scholarships. One. And that's supposed to be a major accomplishment for us? That's a bone. That's a handout. That's a here. That's, say what they want. That's a quota. And we jump around like that's an accomplishment. Like, yay, see, I told you we made it. No, we didn't. Talk to me when we've given out 900 to black students. and programs that are going to make affect change within our own community, then you can tell me that's an accomplishment. One student out of 1,000, that doesn't do anything for me.
Well, like I said last night, though, I'm not really concerned about the college enrollment for the same reason that Google isn't. Your degree is not what tells us that you will be the best employee. We want people who know how to lead, how to think for themselves, who are not egotistical when it doesn't matter. And it would matter if every black, if every school had nothing but black children in it, if we walk out of those schools and do nothing to develop and cultivate power, wealth, and influence, all that enrollment is nothing. We focus on enrollment, not accomplishment. Getting your degree is a wonderful thing. But in my world, if it's about power, wealth, and influence, getting a degree is not power, wealth, and influence. What you do with that degree will determine if that degree is truly power, wealth, and influence.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Once again, keep continuing doing what you're doing. Like the young lady out there in Portland, I support you. I definitely like to, you know, when it comes out 7 a.m., get something out here popping in Raleigh so I can get a group of folks to sit down and watch this and absorb that. So, you know, as soon as that comes out, we're all looking forward to it. Keep doing what you're doing. Melissa, keep putting what you, you know, keep doing what you're doing as well. I really appreciate it. And you all have a good evening and Black First.
Black First, brother, thank you very much for joining us here tonight. BlackChannel.net radio, for those of you who are new here, you're probably hearing something in this place that you've never heard before. You're probably expecting a bunch of people to run around and yell some things, and we don't do that. Nobody is going to sit here and yell racial epithets. Nobody's going to sit here and talk about the white man. Nobody does that. Well, nobody, Mr. I've been in the military 41 years, but nobody is going to do that kind of thing. We don't do that here. For those of you who are new to the Black Channel, I would like to welcome you. And you're hearing something different here. You're hearing about black people who are talking about the rudiments of power, wealth, and influence and getting things done and the greater, larger context in society. And a lot of you have been so brainstormed to have a place where people could speak to you on your level about this. So if you were wondering where those kind of black people were, now you know. Welcome to the Black Channel. Caller from 612, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, I'm just listening.
Okay, caller from 612 is just listening. So we'll go ahead and let them keep listening. See if we can have caller from 312, you're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 312.
Black First, brother. Hello?
Yes, you have your turn sitting on.
Yeah, sorry about that, man. Black First.
And
yeah,
that
this Tiger from Chicago.
Yes, and that is why they call me the authority.
That is true, my friend. How you doing, man?
Black First, brother, what's on your mind?
And just checking in, man, enjoying the subjects that you had going on. I was just wanting to say, man, I hope these callers that you get don't wear you down, man, because, man, you deal with a hell of a lot of ignorance on these phone lines. These people are a piece of work, man, and I just hope that they don't, you know, discourage you in the future and, like, man, to forget this. Black people are a lost cause. I'm going to go fish. I'm going fishing. So,
well,
I just wanted
you
know,
I mean, definitely, like I say, it can be difficult sometimes, but what I've tried to do, brother, I've really just tried to keep my eye on the ball. And in all honesty, I owe what I'm doing to the dead and the unborn. It's not the people I'm walking this earth with that I'm doing this for. I'm doing this for children I don't have, and I'm doing this for elders who aren't even here anymore. I'm doing this for Dr. John Henry Clark. I'm doing this for Malcolm. I'm doing this for Mandela. I'm doing this for Marcus Garvey. I'm doing this for Huey Newton and Fred Hampton. I'm doing this for Kwame Ture. You know, that's who I'm doing this for. I'm not doing this for the people walking around out here. I'm doing this for the dead and the unborn, like I always have. So with that being my standard, I'm not too impressed or too disappointed with what the people sitting in front of me are doing. So that's basically what I try to keep in mind. I just try to keep focused on that.
Right on, bro. Hey, I've worked – when you were saying the power, wealth, and influence, I had a chance to talk to some of my neighbors, like, you know, their kids and stuff. And, you know, I just posed a couple of questions to them as far as, hey, you know, what are the three things that you need to be able to accomplish anything in life? Thing that you want, cars, trips, boats, planes, whatever you want. What would you need? And I was just amazed from what the little kids told me. They were like, you need to work hard, or you need a good job, or you need, you know, to be an employee. And none of them. And I asked about 10 kids in my neighborhood this, and they were like, them owning their own business never even crossed their mind. And I said, wow. I was like, man, Black Authority got something here. So I started, you know, just kind of reintroducing what I've learned on your show. And it's like a light bulb. Just like, no one ever said this to me before. I was like, I can own my own company? I can have my own restaurant? Wow. So I'm friends with you on Facebook, and I try to repost all your stuff and everything like that, too. So I'm just trying to keep everything going, man, and push your movement and our movement, everything that's going on here. And I think you're fantastic, brother.
Well, thank you very much. And like I say, when the documentary comes out, make sure you have other people that you know. Make it movie night if you need to. That kind of thing will be important because I'm not just sitting up saying, well, Dr. Claude Anderson wrote his books and let's sit down with it. No, he's written his. Let me go ahead and put my thing out there. Let Sequoia do her broadcast. Let Umar Johnson do his touring. You know, let everybody do everything that you can be doing. Don't just leave it to one person. Let everybody get involved. If I speak to a couple of thousand people and you speak to 1,000 people and she speaks to 1,000 people, no, man, that's spreading the word. That's spreading the standard that everybody knows that, hey, it's not just one guy down in Louisiana talking about this. It's not just one guy on the East Coast, not just one guy in Philadelphia, not just one female in Portland, not just one guy in Chicago. It's a bunch of people in a bunch of places talking about this. It must be important. Look how many people are talking about it. So often we look at how messed up things are in the world that we forget that we are the world. And so often we forget that. We forget how powerful we really are because we feel so detached and disconnected. And I'm saying you don't have to be that anymore. You don't have to be that anymore. You know, your parents didn't tell you this because, A, your parents were scared, and, B, your parents didn't have any faith in themselves. They were scared of white supremacy, and they only had faith in white supremacy. They taught you how to be a cog in the machine because it was so much safer not challenging white supremacy. They're just been scared to challenge them, and that's why they talk to you about being an employee. Why not tell me about being an employer? Because the only way that you can be an employer in this society or any other is by challenging the establishment. And they don't have the faith in you, and they have nothing but fear about challenging the establishment. They're scared to death. They're scared to death.
I definitely noticed that. You know, and it really wasn't a hard pill to swallow when you said, you know, look at your parents and see what they've left you. And I realized they ain't leave me a goddamn thing. And I was like, you know what? All right, now I know where I'm at. I'm at on the Monopoly board, starting with no money. I don't have $200, nothing. I have to go around this board to start collecting. They didn't leave me anything. No businesses, no hotels, nothing. I'm not even collecting $75 at parking. So when you broke that down the way you did, it gave me a better foundation. And when you said, hey, you know, Black Wall Street was a bunch of streets with strip malls. And I said, you know what? I'm busting my butt now, you know, and I make a decent living. I was like,
I'd like to own a strip mall and put a couple of businesses in a strip mall. So that's actually what I'm working on now, and I wanted to thank you for that. And, you know, one day I can invite you, you know, to Chicago or something, and, you know, maybe you could give a lecture or something.
Well, like I say, before it's over, I'll probably be hitting a bunch of places before it's over, especially when 7 a.m. comes out. So before it's over, there will be, like, I'll probably be out there a lot more active than you've ever seen me before. And that's the moving things forward. But at the same time, don't wait on me. You know, at the same time, make sure you're doing your thing, because that's what this is all about, is everybody who understands what's going on, getting up and getting something done. That is what changes everything. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Well, I say, you know, like you say, everything that's happening now is good. Let's weed out the weak. Let's build with the strong. And, you know, if they're not a part of it, man, the hell with them. Yeah, let's get it going. I'm ready. I'm building the empire on this end. That way we have a platform. We have a place to go and do whatever we have to do in Chicago. And, you know, whoever is with it is with it. If not, you know, get lost. And Black First all day, every day.
Black First, brother. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks.
Let's grab another couple of phone calls here. I don't know if we're able to. Going to need people not to be playing my phone, however. And that's important, because when people play on the phone, I start thinking that you need assistance. And if I think you need assistance, then I have to get you some help. Caller from 702, you're on live at the Black Channel.
Oh, Jason, it's Devontae Douglas calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
What's on your mind, bro?
Not too much, Jason, but I do have my brother on three-way with me. This is his first time listening to the show, and I called in to connect him. Mario, introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Introduce yourself.
How you doing? I'm Mario.
Hello, Mario. Welcome to Black Channel.
My brother just called. Yes. How you doing?
And what's on your mind?
I was just talking about my brother tonight, and he said he was online in queue, and that I should listen to the show. So I said, okay. And it's pretty interesting. Some of the same ideas that I have and some of the same things that I think should be going on within the community, which it's a good thing.
How old are you?
Have a show out like this. For me, I'm 34.
Okay, 34, Warrior. Definitely up there now. Yeah. You say this is something that you've been interested in a while. Have you been acting on any of these principles?
I've been pretty much, yeah, within the neighborhoods and stuff that I'm in, I've just been speaking to the young kids and stuff, trying to tell them to go a different way, and that's who I usually try to go and speak with, the younger kids and parents, if I can get a chance to speak with them, and just try to see where they're at and give them some inspiration or direction to go in and tell them there's more out there than what they're seeing, and to actually go looking for it, and they'll find what they're looking for.
And how many other black men that you associate with are feeling the same way you are?
Not many of them. A lot of them, when I do speak to them a lot about it and stuff like that, they pretty much try to shush me up and tell me to be quiet, or tell me that I'm, you know, doing some Farrakhan movement thing, and they don't want to hear it.
And any black man that you run into who responds to black empowerment like that, you leave him right the hell where you found him. You don't argue with him.
Pretty much.
You don't debate with him. Somebody, you talk about black empowerment, and somebody tries to shush you up, you need to treat them the exact same way that you would if they said, "I vomited on your mama's face."
I told them that to Uncle Tom's. I said, "You feel that way, you're an Uncle Tom."
You just get up and leave them right where they are, because understand something. Those are the kind of Negroes who stood up here and spend the rest of their lives with their wheels just spinning. If you want to know, and I don't care where you live, every Walmart, until the white guys start taking the jobs back, has an old black man pushing the damn cart for cleaning up the floors.
Mm-hmm.
Understand, he didn't just wake up one morning in that position. He got in that position because he spent a lifetime of making mistakes. and saying that these were not mistakes. That's what happened.
The norm, and that the bad is the good.
They have accepted failure, not mediocrity. They have not accepted mediocrity. They have accepted failure as a standard. And when we start talking about any standard that does not include failure, they want to shut us up. This is why you got so many black males out here talking about these fat chicks are thick. Because he can't get a female who is a top-notch female. He wants that standard to be as wide and as high and as open as possible, because otherwise he will not qualify for a female at all. He won't be able to get a female at all if you actually have a standard there. That's why he doesn't want you to have one. He wants that to go away. Because if there's a standard, he loses. That's why he wins.
Yeah.
If there is, he loses.
Yeah, that is true. I deal with a lot of them out there like that. And what I say is I just tell them, you know, like, I read a lot of both sides. You know, I read a lot of African history, a lot of African-American history, and I do study a lot of, I would say, Caucasian history, because if you don't know what they've been doing to you from the time of beginning, because of the same game, it's just a different face on it, then you don't know what's going on. It's been the same game, you know. I wish that everyone would sit down sometimes and watch those old movies. Start with Shaka Zulu. Start with that movie first. And then make your way after you watch that series of movies. Watch Roots. And you watch Shaka Zulu and you see the tricks that they played on Shaka Zulu. Then you watch Roots. Even when the slaves were free, they came up with a new game, which was sharecropping, you know, to keep them in the same position. You know, and it's like the same game still going on. Now they've got drugs and prisons, in which is the slavery modern day for us, and we're falling right into the traps. They've got a whole game that's set up that's wicked, you know, and no one wants to notice the game because, like you said, they're willing to accept a standard of failure because they're just so used to being thrown down in the dirt and they don't want to get up anymore. They just say, why not just lay here in the dirt? It's comfortable here. You know, they'll send me a check. I can get this. I can get that. And I don't have to worry about anything else. And they should watch those movies. Those movies are very inspirational. Roots is pretty a good inspirational movie just because of the ending. You know, Chicken George, he got them. You know, he did what he had to do and got them. You know, and it's showing the black man that look, they're gonna try to play a game on you, but you better be more keen and you better be more cunning and you better know how the game is being played and get in and get out where you can and leave it at that and stick with your people because. You try to be, you know, I know a lot of white people and stuff, and I know guys, I have a lot of more education than they do and a lot more experience than they do, but when I go looking for a job, if I lose a job, I have a hard time getting into places, but they can have a lack of experience, no experience at all, and for some reason they get the job, you know, and it's like, I know what it is, and I know what the game is and stuff. That's why we need more brothers at the top that are willing to have organizations that have brothers that are waiting in the wings for jobs, that are groomed, that are willing to make a commitment to saying that they are not going to go there, they're not going to tarnish this other brother's name who's sticking his neck out for them, and they're not gonna do anything that's gonna tarnish the reputation of the person or themselves when they're extending this job to them, so that we can get more people in positions. Because right now, you can go look anywhere. We're being overtaken. Like you said, we are the laughing stock. We got people that haven't been here more than 5 years, and they're doing better than we are, and we've been here for however long, you know?
Well, I mean, now you're 54 years old, and you're in the belly of the beast,
yeah.
So what you got?
In the belly of the beast, yes, I am.
Okay, now it's your turn.
Now,
what are you going to do about it?
I've had it on my mind. I've done the investigation of starting an organization, whether it be nonprofit or something like that, in which I can just get a place, a warehouse building or something, where I can pull youth in and just educate them upon themselves and educate them upon where they come from and the great accomplishments in which African Americans and people of color have made throughout history, so that way they can feel that they have some fuel in their tank and that someone's done something like them. Who looks like them, that's a great accomplishment. Therefore, they can go on further because, like I said, I study a lot of Caucasian writings and stuff, and if you ever heard of, what was his name, George Orwell, he had a very poignant he had just a quote that he said, and it resonates so much with the black community, and states that he who controls the past controls the future. He who controls the present controls the past. Now, if you look at that, we got Caucasians in a white supremacy, you know, system that's teaching our children about themselves. And when I've been through public schools and stuff, they teach us nothing about how to be proud of as a colored person and stuff. So if they're not going to do it, it's up to us to do it for our children, because if they don't know where they're coming from, they're never going to know where they're going.
Well,
so, you know, if they know their past, then
the problem is that you don't need a school, and you do not need a school to teach
you
that, nor should you be expecting it.
I don't expect it. That's
Jewish
what my organization
people
would try to pull up in.
Well,
yeah.
These Jewish people leading
to take up
their schools to teach their children about the Holocaust?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Do you see Asian leaving up the schools to teach their children about Pol Pot and their history? No. Black people are the only people on earth who say, let me try the schools made by the dominant society first, and then if that doesn't work, we're supposed to be doing that first, even if they even talk about teaching, quote, African studies. We're supposed to be telling, there's not supposed to be a single black child in that, a black child or adult in that entire room. These people are unqualified.
Yeah.
They're unqualified to speak about our experience. So, no, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
That should just be voting. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Yeah, that's where, like I said, my organization, if I were to start one, I've studied it for the last 6 months of trying to get a nonprofit off the ground, and it would be to educate the children as well as parents. I would like to get the parents more involved in the children.
That's a non-starter, by the way. I'm really kind of tired of hearing all the black folks, especially younger black people, talk about, I want to start a nonprofit. You already know that you're messed up, a nonprofit. I start getting that same feel I do when we go to church and they start talking about
tithing.
I start getting the same feeling when somebody says, I want to start a nonprofit. There's a bunch of black folk out here. Why don't we do what the white folk are doing and start a profit? And that way you can make whatever kind of school, foundation, whatever you want to, because most of your nonprofits are dependent upon profit organizations. Why don't we start with that first, and let's hear your plan about that first, and then the nonprofit will take care of itself. You start making a profit, and then the nonprofit becomes a non-issue.
That's what my issue is now. I have to make a profit before I would like to start a nonprofit.
Well, that's the part I was asking you about, though, because you went straight to nonprofit. You get that part about the profit.
Yeah, that's one of the things
that's what you need to focus on. I wouldn't even be thinking about the nonprofit.
First, I have to take care of myself to get myself in a position.
I wouldn't even worry about a nonprofit. I wouldn't even worry about that. I would only be worried about a profit organization. I wouldn't even worry about nonprofit anything. It would be all about a profit organization. If it's not that, what are you doing? I wouldn't even worry about it.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much for checking in with us, brother. Please call again. Thank you very
much
for checking in with us, Devontae. Blackbird, as always. Let's see if we can grab caller from the 323. You're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 323, you are in Los Angeles, and you're live.
I'm just listening.
Okay, you might be doing something else over there for a moment.
Can you hear me?
Yes, can hear you. Can you hear us?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just listening.
Okay. We'll put you back on hold there. Yeah, there. Kind of just creaking along there in Los Angeles, y'all. Okay, let's see if we can try grabbing a few more calls here. Caller from 239, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hold on. I'm just listening.
Okay, your phone is really breaking up on you, whoever you are. See if you can try calling back some other time or whatever. Your phone is really giving you hell. NSA must be tapping you. Got to be. Caller from 682, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, I'm just listening in.
Okay. Blog Talk strikes again. They're very, very good about that over there. Caller from 954, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is D. I'm calling out of Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, D. You might, your phone's coming through real muddled on you. Is there any way you can take it off of that Bluetooth or speaker that you're on?
Yeah, I had you on Bluetooth. Hey, man, I just want to say I really enjoy your broadcast. It's an insult to call it a show, for real. Yeah, I was just listening too, man. Sorry.
Okay, well, I'll definitely, like I said,
I was trying to listen to it on the net, but it just keeps dropping.
That's odd. Well, I will.
Yeah, it's like going in and out when you.
Kind of putting back on hold there, but I will be on the phone first thing in the morning. It will be hell to pay. That's all I got to say. It will be hell to pay. Caller from 562, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, Jason. It's Nisha.
Hello, Nisha. Well, I don't even have to add there. I'll go ahead and just let you listen in here. Nisha is one of our regular callers who, for some strange reason, they just will not let her listen to anything at all, period. Okay, we have another caller from the 682. It's not the same person. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Clifford from Decatur. I called a couple times before. I just wanted to comment on the Decatur, Texas. Just wanted to comment on the caller before, the retired Navy gentleman.
Okay.
I was the guy talking about the trucks and everything like that before. I'm a retired Navy guy. I did 20 years, and I retired in 2010. And like he was saying, you know, I didn't ever go around bragging. I did this, that, and the other. My family knows that I, you know, did my time and I retired. But most people I meet, the everyday person, they don't have a clue. Now, what I wanted to really speak on is I have been able to utilize some of the benefits. They're not great and mighty benefits, but there's some benefits that I have as a result of, you know, my military service. One, I do get a small pension compensation. I have a disability check coming in, too. And because of that disability, I'm allowed to have handicap license plates on my car, even though I don't utilize them. I don't really utilize them that much. It's allowed me to get discounts on certain things, like when I go to the stores, I get 10% discounts, like Home Depot and Lowe's, and I was able to purchase a home for a 30-year VA loan for 3.5%. And I utilize these things that, you know, these small things as a result of my service, and, you know, they help me out a lot. Now, when I was in, I did air traffic control as my primary profession. And anybody that knows what that is, it's a very difficult job. And like I said, I stated before, I worked primarily with Caucasian coworkers. And what I did over the years, I talked to these people and I tried to get into their psyche to find out how they thought about life, how they thought about the world, how the world works for them, how they get things done. And that has allowed me to get more insight on what I need to do as far as bettering myself as a Black person and helping my family and Black people, because if you can know how the mind of a lot of people work that try to that are keeping you disenfranchising you, you know, us as Black people, you can find out how they do their tactics, and then you can formulate your own counter tactics to try to, you know, build you know wealth, power, and influence for yourself and for your people. And also, I was able to obtain a secret clearance, which I've maintained over the, you know, the entire time of my enlistment. And that, because of having that secret clearance and my profession, when I did retire, I was able to go work for a contractor overseas. And in that 1 year, calendar year, I was able to make two times as much money as I'd ever made as my highest paid year in the Navy, which was probably about like $45,000, $50,000, and actually in that 1 year I made about a little over $80,000 just because I had a secret clearance and my profession, whereas most of the people that did not have a secret clearance, they made about $4,000 less per month than I did.
So, okay, I gotta tell you, That is all just incredibly fascinating. It really, really is. Although I do think it's going to lose a lot of people with so many of the details. You guys in the military have a lot of details, which is nice, but can we try to give us the Reader's Digest version?
Okay, well, most of it is already digested with what I just said. But when I retired, you know, Jason, I thought that, okay, I did my 20 years, I got a little pension, I live under my means, so the pension take care of all of my needs, and I'm just going to sit here like a bump on the log, which is what I had been doing for, like, since end of 2011. I've been lethargic, I've been sedentary and neglectful of my body, and I hadn't done anything, and I didn't really think to do anything. But after, you know, starting to hear, when I first heard Joan, the other guy's show, and then I started listening to your show, and then you mentioned Dr. Claude Anderson and some other guys, it really didn't hit me at first. Then I went and investigated and I researched some of those people, and it blew me away in ways that I can't even describe in words. And it's inspired me to come out of retirement because I discovered that, you know, just because I was in the military, I don't have any wealth, power, and influence. So that's why, as per the broadcast that we talked before about the trucking industry and stuff like that and my ideas, I do plan on trying to make myself a viable person in the black community and help for black people. And as far as myself, and I am on that path at this time, you know, by trying to acquire these things that I talked about before. And that's all I want to say. Thank you for your work and broadcast. And I agree with a lot of words that Melissa said, too, as far as the children and stuff like that.
That's well, definitely, like I say, everybody would take that seriously. We are in the situation that we're in today because the last three generations did not take raising their children for power, wealth, and influence seriously. They just said, hey, we had them. They haven't died from exposure like goldfish. So I did my job, and that's not what it's about. It's not about that at all. Thank you very much for checking in with us, brother. We do appreciate your call there. I'm going to wrap up things here shortly, but I want to try to get as many other calls in as I can before I do. See if we can try taking a few more calls here. Caller from 951, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Just listening.
All right, we'll go ahead and put them back over here. Yes, sir, it is going to be a hell of a morning, let me tell you. I don't know how much good it'll do, but it's a good thing y'all will not be able to listen on that phone call because that might make me pretty doggone unpopular around here. I'll take just another call or two, and then we're going to see about wrapping things up here. Caller from 330, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First, brother.
Black First, brother, what's your name? Where you calling from?
David, calling from Ohio.
What's on your mind?
Two things, real quick. One, yesterday we were talking with the young sister with the SBA situation, and I totally agree with what you said there, but I wanted to probe in a different direction with respect to that subject. I hear a lot of us are talking about getting loans or going to an organization and getting capital or borrowing capital, and I wouldn't say, at least that I have a business per se, but let's just say that fixing computers has been lucrative on the side away from my 9-to-5, and it's been that way for many years. My question is, why do we not take a hold of the idea of bootstrapping and just we have a 9-to-5 or we have a 9-to-12? We save our money so that we own our entities when we build them. And because what you do is with loans, I find, is you're basically just giving your business away because now they have a little bit of money invested in it. If the business is worth 10 times as much, if you still owe part of the original loan, they can go to court and protest. And the way the justice system is against us. Next thing you know, they own the business.
Well, I mean, that's not going to happen as long as you are keeping up with your principal on your loan. So as long as you're servicing your debt, that's fine. What worries me is I hear so many black people, as I was saying to the young man earlier, I hear so many black people come up with financial strategies that sound more like financial schemes. That's the thing I have a problem with. If what you are involved in does not involve working or the person you're getting money from doing that, I question your motives. You're talking about the reason why they want to talk about nonprofits and getting an SBA loan is because somebody told them that an SBA loan didn't have to be repaid. That's why they're so eager to get an SBA loan because, well, the government gave me welfare and I don't have to repay that, and they gave me food stamps and I don't have to pay that. So the SBA is a government agency. Surely they work on the same principle, and they don't. Somebody told them that if you get the SBA, it's just like every other government handout organization, and it's not. This one operates by a totally different set of rules. So the problem is that too many of our people are trying to get something for nothing because nobody has sat them down and told them the steps that they need to take to get the capital that they actually need. As far as taking out a loan, there is absolutely nothing wrong with taking out a loan. It's not. The only time that it gets to be a bad thing is when you cannot service it. But that's the point of starting a business, is that you're supposed to have a plan in place for once I get this money, how am I going to repay it back? But nobody can take your business from you. Your business gets taken from you because there was somebody you needed to pay money to, and you didn't pay them, and they took it to court, and they got the business that way. But again, don't take out a loan if you do not have a clear plan or strategy for servicing that loan. Business is uncertain. By definition, it is uncertain. There are no guarantees. Everybody wants me or Dr. Anderson or, you know, anybody else to give them a guarantee, and none of us are going to do that because there isn't one. You have an unlimited upside. You have a limited downside. The limited downside is zero. So you can fall all the way to the ground, or you can go all the way to the 10th dimension. But in this world of unlimited benefit, understand, there are also tremendous liabilities you could run into also. And you are not going to be able to circumvent that. You just won't. Everybody wants a secret formula for circumventing that, and it doesn't exist. Even if your parents are loaded with money, as Bush found out with Arbusto, look it up. But as the Bush family found out with Arbusto, just because you come from a family with money and you drill oil wells does not mean that you're going to make money. Nobody can guarantee you that. No one. And we need to start properly educating our people about how to legitimately and properly start a business, to start an enterprise. No more of this hustle stuff. No more of this, I'm going to make a money machine and I'm just going to be spending dough like Scrooge McDuck in his money bin. No more of that. Let's start getting it into our heads that we are going to build a legitimate enterprise. Let's start doing that.
Yes, sir. My last thought is actually a totally different direction, and I'll try to be brief. My thing is, in my career working with computers and everything, I've learned two valuable lessons. One is that in this day and age, at least, a degree don't mean much and nothing in my field. They only care if an organization has certified that you can do it, and when that gets you the interview, when you go in, can you answer questions or can you show them you can think through the process to illustrate to them at some level you can at least come up with an answer? And what I've tried to reach out to as many blacks as I can is to show them how I did it and how to, okay, if your finances are tight right now, you're working in a minimal income stream, come away from that. Here's the things I did. Here's what you have to study, what you have to learn. Study this on your own, and then you can come away from that $15, $20 an hour, and you can jump into $40, $50, $60, and if you take it to the top, you can go into $100 an hour on contracts. And what I find is this. I find the young brothers is usually very receptive to this. I have the hardest problem reaching my sisters and trying to bring them in. because for some reason I give this aura of I'm accusing them or I'm threatening them in some way by bringing this to their attention, and I assume that they're not doing good because I'm presenting opportunity where they can do better. Is there a way I can get past that?
Technically, no. By definition, men are not builders. We are trying to get women to do something that inherently they do not do. And then we wonder why our women act more like males than like women. So you can get them to become builders and act more like men, or we can allow them to be nurturers and let them be women. But that's the reason why you're having such an uphill climb. It's always that way. Women are not mechanical in nature. Building, by definition, is mechanical in nature. And women have to start shedding their femininity in order to be able to properly utilize becoming mechanical in nature. You are altering these females' nature, or at least you're trying to. You're meeting with limited results because that's not in their nature. And we as men, as black men in particular, need to accept that. Because we're sitting out here whining and moaning and complaining about all the females with hood rats, nose, and butch acting and stuff like that. Well, that's because what are we built? What have we built? We haven't built anything. We are supposed to be doing the building. You're supposed to be talking to the men about that. To the women, you offer it to them. Of course, you offer it to them. But I wouldn't spend any real amount of time jumping up and down on them about that. Not really for the guys either, by the way, to be totally honest with you. But for the females, understand that's counterintuitive. We are trying to transform our girls into androgynous beings. And what I'm saying is that this is a game that even the winners lose. Even if you succeed in turning them into mechanical, linear-minded individuals, now they're going to start acting more like men than like females. And that was not your, I hope that was not your intended result, but take it what all this single otherism has done. Do they act like females? No, they don't. They act like workers. In other words, they act like men. That's going to be the inevitable result every time.
Understand, understood. I appreciate your insight. That's all I had at this time. I'll listen to the rest of the presentation, Black First. And I just want to shout out to everyone listening. Everybody has something that they're good at, something they know that can help the other young brothers out. We have to be more community-minded in general and less segregated and with our specialties. Okay, I know this. I'm not sharing anybody because I'm scared that they're going to take this away from me. If it's truly good, you'll find another avenue right around the corner to use that same skill again with somebody else. We just got to list. I believe that if we just take what we have to offer that's beneficial and offer it up to as many of us as we can, we'll be in a better place.
Thank you very much for joining us, brother. We appreciate your call. Let's see if I can I was going to stop right now, but I'll grab one more. Caller from the 856, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
My first brother, what's your name? Where you coming from?
This is Eric. I'm calling from D.C. I actually called in last night, and I'm catching the tail end of the show. And I was the young gentleman that was saying that I was going after an SBA loan. And what I wanted to say that I forgot to say last night, that going out for an SBA loan is no joke. It is no joke at all because my father, who is also my business partner, we actually put together a loan package that is over 106 pages long. And it is listing everything from our executive statement to executive narrative to amortization tables on how we're going to pay it back. And on top of that, a lot of quotes for many different types of insurances, such as health insurance, liability insurance, errors and omission, and personal guarantee, plus equipment and rent and
all the capital that we need. But one thing that I want to reiterate, and you're correct about this, was that going out for SBA loans, you can't have that handout mentality because you're going to have to pay it back. And that's what the amortization table is for. We're pretty much listing out, okay, this is what we're going to borrow, and this is how we are going to pay you back with interest. So those are my thoughts, and I'm hoping that anybody who is listening to this can understand that it does take some type of work. Now, I'm not saying that 106 pages is typical for every business, but I'm just saying that it takes a lot of work and a lot of research to put into that, and so far we are in front of a couple of lenders right now.
Yeah, and like I say, I mean, that's now these people are all off in your business is the thing. That's the kind
yeah.
of thing right there that really gets my attention. It's like they are just off in your business now. And I don't have really a level of comfort with that kind of thing, especially when the government doing it, because they have the authority to talk to other agencies. I just wouldn't want them to have that. I just wouldn't want to be hand-delivering to them that kind of information. I just wouldn't. But, I mean, I hope everything works out for you. I'm not
going to say I mean, look, all I know is that whatever I'm doing is 100% legal and straight-laced, and, you know, all the legal and regulatory, all the legal and regulatory paperwork is together, and everything is, you know, on the up and up. So that's why I'm not scared of that. I'm just hoping that things work out.
Well, and when it comes to business, it's not a matter of hope. It's a matter of planning.
Yes.
So definitely, we want to thank you for calling in. Please remember, it's broadcast, not show. What Steve Harvey does is a show. What those other people do is a show. What we do here is enlightenment.
Right.
And that's exactly what we want. Thank you very much for checking in with us, brother. See if I can... okay, I got a few more minutes. I'll try somebody here. Caller from 203, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello?
Yes, you're live.
How you doing, Jason Black? This is Kyle Butler. I'm 16, and I've been listening to your show. And after I listened to your show, it really changed my
broadcast.
Mindset.
Broadcast. You've been listening to my broadcast, but you're still calling the show.
Yeah, broadcast.
Thank you.
And I noticed that you talk about owning your own company and owning a business so it can change how Black people interact with each other, right? One of the things that I actually noticed is that you mostly talk about offline type of businesses, correct? About owning the media and stuff. But one of the things that I think Black people should focus on as a whole is online businesses, like Dropbox, Facebook, Twitter. Those startups create millions of dollars. And imagine Black people learning programming like PHP, HTML. I started an online business when I was only 11 years old with $0 in investment and zero loans. So I think that if Black people focus on learning programming and focus on opening and doing a Black online business, what would be the outcome of that?
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem with an online business. I mean, that's not the real issue.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, even though Zuckerberg, you know, basically he had an idea and what he had to do was figure out how to monetize it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, when they originally started out, I mean, that was not, you know, what they had when they started out at first. So
right. You
can have an idea and you can have a groovy website, but if you don't have a plan to be able to monetize it, it's not going to work. It's not going to work.
All right. In the sense,
learning programming, I don't have a problem with that. But you're never going to get anywhere if your programming language and knowledge does not have a goal. He had a goal. He knew, you know, they needed to learn Perl to be able to get the original Facebook site up to at least having the feet under it that they wanted. From there, they were able to take the concept and then go seek venture capital. You could not do a Facebook. You can't do a Facebook without a few million dollars. You can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't just get a regular web host and off we go. Something like Facebook, you would have to have your own servers. You'd have to have your own IT people. In other words, you would have to start your own enterprise before you could even get that website started. So that's the difference. It's not like making Candy Crush or something like that. Do something like Facebook, you have to have a corporation. You basically would need enough money to start your own corporation to get this thing off the ground. It would take millions of dollars. It took it then, and it would take it today to get a Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, whatever, off the ground like that.
Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, with black-owned businesses, correct? Black-owned businesses, the marketing is not always perfect. The marketing solution for black-owned businesses is not always efficient. But since with the digital world, correct, marketing becomes very easier to interact and reach a higher audience. So I strongly believe that if black-owned businesses add a plan to their business marketing and focus on, digital marketing like social media and pay-per-click and retargeting and turning their offline business into an online business, all right, and just building the website and building the audience online, because 90% of shoppers today use the internet before even going to the store. That's why you see Amazon, Walmart are still in most of the competitions, and that's why you see black-owned e-commerce businesses are dying out. So I think that there's a way to fix all this problem. I think that most black-owned businesses must turn to the digital world. They should focus on leveraging their offline business and turning it to a digital business and focus on retargeting social media marketing and pay-per-click. What do you think about that?
I agree. I mean, that is not internet business. That's business today. I was watching a movie from, I think it was 70, 71, 79, somewhere in there, called Airport with Burt Lancaster. And I was just thinking about how it used to be when you got airline tickets. Could any of us imagine today making a telephone call to get airline tickets today? Could any of us imagine that? No. You get all your tickets online and you do it all yourself. We couldn't imagine, what they were doing, making a phone call to get airline tickets. We couldn't imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not internet business. That is business today. That is just the way it is. You are either going to make that nexus of your business and online, or eventually at some point you will not have a business. Unless you're just dealing with something really, first economy like construction or plumbing or something like that. Mm-hmm. But even then, you would want to try to integrate it as much as you can. You're missing out on things.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely,
and
one
of the things that I actually want to give out to your show, because I feel like if I can give something in return to your
show
for helping me out.
His brother is determined to make us into a show. He just really is. Well, let me say this three more times.
Yeah. How black-owned businesses should leverage digital marketing more, all right? So I wanna give something out. Like, most black people, when they actually become successful, they don't really come back to the community and start sharing their success. They keep their success.
Well, that's the point
right
there. Now, that's a question, though. Say that
black
people, when they get
and one of the things that I want to give out to the broadcast
is
that I own a digital marketing agency, RoyFocus.net, R-O-I.
Okay, brother. Whoa. I did authorize you to spam my broadcast, sir.
All right. Sorry about that.
That's not cool. That's not all right. I don't know.
I'm sorry about that, just in black. And the third question,
brother,
I actually really have.
Brother,
really wanna
I need for you to stop. I need for you to stop talking now, okay? Okay?
All right.
Okay. Because you seem to be having difficulty hearing on your own. I'm going to need to release your call now. Because you've broken the rule. And we can't have that, okay? All right. Brothers, I don't have a problem helping people. I really don't. Some people get it into their heads that what he said about online marketing. I want you to look at what he just did and listen to what he just did and understand that is talked about that black people making online marketing, and then he came right in here and proceeded to demonstrate exactly what you don't do. On my broadcast, I do not charge people for advertising. I should probably start, but I don't charge people for advertising because I don't let people advertise. If there's somebody that I know, I'll let them promote it. But, brother, you don't just call up somebody's broadcast and start yelling out your website. First of all, that's not going to get customers. Second of all that's going to do is turn somebody who could potentially help you, that'd be me, into somebody who's extremely offended. I don't know your website. I can't let you sit up here and tell people, come to my website for computer services, and then a bunch of people start sending me emails saying that the TBA let this guy talk on his broadcast, and he let the fella give out his website, and now my computer and stuff is all messed up. Like I say, we need to learn how to start operating our businesses properly. That's a big thing that we're missing here. Maybe I should. You know what? Maybe I should start extending to people the opportunity to advertise. Maybe that would make things a little bit different for them. We'll see. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, or humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future is uncompromising.